Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink a beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key, or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away, huh. But I feel alright, I feel alright tonight, feel alright. I feel alright tonight. And I'll bring you precious contraband.
Right, all right, all right. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. It's Tuesday, 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday. Get your requests in now. One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Hey, coming up on the show, very excited. After 1:30, we're going to be joined by Kyle Kinane, who is an unbelievably funny stand-up comedian who you've seen on Drunk History and At Midnight. He's been on all the talk shows. He's a very funny stand-up comedian right from around these parts. He's coming to town for two gigs, stand-up gigs at Talia Hall. It's Monday the 25th and Tuesday the 26th. 26th is sold out, but there are tickets available for the 25th, and that's Kyle Kinane, and he'll be joining us after 1:30. He's a very, very funny guy, and I'm really excited to have him on the show. So, also coming up, we're going to talk about cover songs. What are the best cover songs of all time? We'll listen to some of those and talk about some of those. One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest premiered in theaters in 1975. On this date, and that's going to get us to talk about movies that are better than the book. And because I think One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, the movie, is actually better than the book, even though I like the book very much. So there you go. So that's all coming up. If you want to join us at any time, it's 312-981-7200 for talk and text. You can also send in your requests for 2 for Tuesday. Follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show, and stay connected with us on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Nick D Show. Facebook.com/Nick D Show. Alrighty then. Download our podcast. Subscribe to the podcast. It's free. Every single second of every single show is podcast. And so you can subscribe. Go to iTunes or wherever you get your podcast, WGNradio.com as well. You can check out our podcast there. Subscribe. It's free and it'll automatically be sent to your device, and you can listen at your leisure, bro. So there it is. That's what's coming up on this Tuesday morning show. Let me say hello to my producer, Tom Hush. Tom, how are you?
I'm great, Nick. How are you?
I'm okay.
Good.
All right. I'm excited to have Kyle Kinane on the show.
He's so funny.
He's hilarious. He's absolutely hilarious.
The minute I found out that he was from Chicago, I was so excited.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's got that sensibility about him. There's something about comics who come up from the Midwest and specifically Chicago. They've just got a way about them that are just beyond funny.
Speaking of which, we also, the Sun-Times put out this thing called Chicagopedia Volume 1, which has a whole bunch of Chicagoese in it. And we have a very specific way of communicating and talking in this city. They've done a wonderful job with this, splitting it up into different categories. It's how we all talk, how we refer to things, and it's really nicely and really illustrated. It's just a bunch of things that are in here that are Chicago. We'll jump into that a little bit too this morning. You're right. I mean, you can always. It's, you know, it's funny because I've lived here my whole life, you know, if ever I've traveled somewhere, someone says that, you know, people tell me that I have a Chicago accent, and I don't hear it, obviously. I mean, it's not the exaggerated super fans, SNL, you know, the Bears, that kind of thing. But I guess people can tell, you know, and so Kyle Kinane has a Chicago accent. There's
totally.
Just no question about it. You can pretty much guess where the guy is from.
I love explaining to people the concept of the word ope.
Ope.
Yeah, when you need to get past somebody, you're bumming. Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Just going to squeeze right past you.
Yeah.
Some folks really, really find that incredibly folksy and charming,
mm-hmm.
when in reality it's something we say every day. Just, oh, going to get right past you there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. So we got a very unique way of communicating in this city. We always have. Always have. So anyway, that's coming up too, in addition to all the other stuff that's happening here on the show. And in the newsroom with us all morning is Vic Vaughn. Vic, how are you?
I'm recuperating.
You're recuperating?
Yeah.
What's the matter?
I had a bad CTA experience.
Oh, no.
Yesterday. I got on the train. It was busy. It was a busy train. It's a packed car. And you know those back seats? There was two open.
Mm-hmm.
So I just squeezed my... Even the aisle was packed. I didn't know why anybody was sitting back there. And I sat down, and it smelled like death. And I... Mistake I made. I should have got up immediately, but I waited till the next stop, and I got off of the car onto another car. But the damage was done.
Oh, man.
Oh, I still can't get it out of my nose.
Oh, that's terrible.
I threw the pants away. That's how bad it was.
You threw the pants away?
I went home, and I had to do laundry anyway, but I didn't want to wash them with other clothes. It was that bad, Nick.
Oh, that's terrible.
So I threw them away. Jeannie gets home. I told her, and she says, "What jacket were you wearing?" I said, "Oh, I forgot about the jacket."
Oh,
she's going to take it to the cleaners.
Oh, okay. Wow. Yeah, sometimes they can be pretty potent.
That was the most potent I'd ever...
Yeah. Jeez.
I don't know what the cure to get that out of your nose is.
I don't know. Wow. You get some... you know, there's some Glade in the bathroom.
Just shoot it right up
just,
there?
Just stick the thing right in your nose and...
That might work. That might work. Maybe.
Well, I'm glad you're recuperating.
Thanks.
Wow. The CTA can be a stressful, weird situation.
It can be.
So, all right, let's take a break here. When we come back, there's a Chinatown prequel TV series that's in development at Netflix. David Fincher is involved, and so is Robert Towne. And so we're going to talk a little bit about that after we break. And then after 1:30, comedian Kyle Kinane is going to join us right here on the show. Welcome back. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And that, of course, is a score from the classic Roman Polanski-directed film Chinatown, one of the best movies of the 70s, and a really great film, with also featuring one of Nicholson's best performances. So there's a prequel series to the classic film Chinatown that's in early development at Netflix. Variety has confirmed with sources. David Fincher and Robert Towne, the film's writer, are attached to pen the script. It will reportedly focus on the exploits of a young Jake J.J. Gittes during his early days as a private investigator. Netflix declined to comment. Where do you stand on this?
Well, we saw what happened when they tried to make a sequel.
Yeah.
The Two Jakes. Was that also penned by Robert Towne?
Yeah.
And
Nicholson and Towne wrote it. Nicholson directed it.
Yeah.
Great cast.
Sure.
Not a good movie.
And I understand the appeal of it. Of course, it's one of the landmark moments in neo-noir as a genre, and really is visually referenced all the time, is something that's really important to
also has one of the great also has one of the greatest closing lines in film history.
Yeah.
But I can see the... I mean, look, but Robert Towne is involved, which gives me a little bit of hope, despite the fact that, you know, he was partially responsible for The Two Jakes, which was just disappointing on so many levels. I was really looking forward to that movie. And when I saw Robert Towne's name on it and that Nicholson was directing and starring, I was like, okay.
It seemed all the pieces were in place.
And it just didn't work.
No, but I do find it interesting that Fincher... is really Netflix's boy right now.
Yeah.
He just wants to work with Netflix. He's already done Mindhunter with them. Doing another series, another crime series, should be pretty cool. And it seems like they just give him carte blanche to do whatever he wants.
Yeah.
So hopefully that means that him and Robert Towne can sit down and really hash out something that's worth watching.
The film was released, the Chinatown was released in 1974. It starred Jack Nicholson and Faye Dunaway. Nicholson played Gittes, who is originally hired to expose an adulterer who becomes embroiled in a much larger plot. Roman Polanski directed with Robert Evans producing. The film became a box office and critical hit upon its release, racking up 11 Academy Award nominations. Town ultimately took home the film's lone Oscar statuette for original screenplay. A sequel titled The Two Jakes was released in 1990 with Nicholson and Town returning. In addition to his Oscar for Chinatown, Town was nominated for his work on the screenplays for the films The Last Detail, another Nicholson starring vehicle, as well as Shampoo and Greystoke, The Legend of Tarzan, Lord of the Apes. His other credited works include The Firm and Mission Impossible. Should the Chinatown project go to series, it would not be the first classic Nicholson film to get a Netflix prequel series treatment. The streamer is currently prepping the drama series Ratched, starring Sarah Paulson, from executive producer Ryan Murphy. The series will explore the backstory of the infamous Nurse Ratched from the One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Wow! Is Sarah Paulson just going to work with Ryan Murphy for the rest of her career?
Well, he's been incredibly fruitful for her career.
No, there's no question about it.
And the performances that she's gotten to give in his series, although I'm not as much of a fan as some folks are of American Horror Story.
Yeah, I'm not a fan at all.
But her in American Crime Story was great.
She was phenomenal in the OJ thing.
And that was the first time I was ever aware of Sarah Paulson, I'll be honest. Mm-hmm. I had never seen her in anything before, and then suddenly she was on my radar, and I wanted to watch her in everything.
Well, it's interesting that she's going to play Nurse Ratched.
Yeah.
But I didn't even hear about this.
I do get afraid when we're over-explaining origin stories of popular characters. You know, does it really matter to know how Jake Gittes got to be Jake Gittes? Mm-hmm. You know, is it going to be something that is helpful to the story of Chinatown, or something that just over explains? Because as much as I enjoy something like, say, the Alien prequels, I like those against, you know, a lot of popular opinion, but it takes away something of the mystery of, like, the Xenomorph. You know, that's why it was scary. And why Jake Gittes is cool is just because he just is. He just is a character.
Yeah.
You come into a certain point in his life, this is how you meet him, this is who he is. Do we need, like, an explanation of how he becomes that guy? Does it really matter?
And who would play him?
That's a tough question.
Yeah.
How do you tackle a...
It's such an iconic performance.
Yeah.
How do you and do a that? Character, you know? I mean, are they going to go for someone who visually resembles Jack Nicholson, or are they going to go a completely different route? That's a question. You know? Or they could just use Jack Nicholson and de-age him. You know, Nicholson hasn't made a movie in almost 10 years.
I think it would be hard to get him out to do TV. You know?
Yeah, well, I mean, he's like in his 80s now, yeah. So he's not. But yeah, he hasn't made a movie in a... He's been, you know, gone. The last movie he made was that really disappointing James L. Brooks movie with Reese Witherspoon and Owen Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember the name of it. How Do You Know? I think it's called How Do You Know?
Yeah.
Which I didn't dislike, because I pretty much love everything that James L. Brooks does. But it was not great, and it did not light up the box office at all.
No, because all I can think of is the last thing I personally saw him in was The Bucket List.
Ugh.
And I feel like once he got to, because How Do You Know was, 2010, so that'll be 10 years coming up.
Yeah.
I don't think he'll get back in the game. Maybe
he doesn't need to. No.
He might give one legacy performance before he's kind of too old to do it.
I would like to see him come back, though. You know? I mean, he's been great in so many. About Schmidt, I love him in About Schmidt, and I love that movie. The great Alexander Payne. It would be tough for a young actor to step into that role. You know, it's such a, I mean, it is a legendary character and a legendary movie. That would be tough for somebody to step into that.
It's one of the few movies that I would say has from a screenplay perspective, has a perfect screenplay.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's one of the greatest screenplays ever written.
I'm pretty sure it's still taught in, like, film schools.
There's
and
no
stuff.
Question about it.
I know
it there's no question about it. It's a perfect screenplay. It's, and it, you know, and it made Robert Towne.
Mm-hmm.
who would go on to write some other really great stuff, too. Like, I mean, The Last Detail. He wrote The Last Detail. And I love that movie.
Him and Nicholson had quite a relationship
yeah.
in terms of success until, really, The Two Jakes.
Yeah.
But
and then he started hanging out with Tom Cruise. They did. He started hanging out with Tom Cruise. He's got a credit on Days of Thunder.
Yeah.
Robert Towne has a credit on Days of Thunder, the stupid car racing movie. What's his name in that movie? Cole Trickle, right?
I think so. I haven't watched Days of Thunder.
Because there's a real racer. There's a real racer, I think, named Dick Trickle. And so they named him Cole Trickle, I think, was the character's name that Tom Cruise plays in Days of Thunder.
Yeah, Cole Trickle.
Right. Tony Scott directed that, right? Tony Scott? And then Robert Towne has a credit on it. And then Robert Towne wrote Mission Impossible. He worked with Tom Cruise a bunch of times.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, Days of Thunder is kind of just a remake of Top Gun.
It's Top Gun with wheels is what it is.
It's
the same thing. No, it's not.
It's kind of cool.
Days of Thunder is a terrible movie. It's a terrible movie. Top Gun's not very good either. But I remember seeing Days of Thunder going, what am I watching? What is this? That was before, you know, that was when Nicole Kidman, they just got together. He and Nicole Kidman just got together. This was before we realized that actually Nicole Kidman could act. It took a bunch of years before I realized that she could act. Like I said before, it was Eyes Wide Shut. When I saw her in Eyes Wide Shut, I went, whoa. She's not just arm candy, you know, on Tom Cruise's arm. She's good. And obviously, as the years have gone on, we know how great Nicole Kidman is. But it was Eyes Wide Shut. When I saw her in Eyes Wide Shut, I was like, what? Where did that performance come from? All right, so David Fincher, working a lot on the Netflix stuff. Yeah, The Two Jakes, I remember being, I was very, very excited about The Two Jakes when it came out. So, and then it was really disappointing. But it's hard to follow up Chinatown. You know what I mean? Because Chinatown is an absolute classic. God, it's so good. It's such a good movie. I haven't watched Chinatown in a while. That gives me an excuse to pop it into the old DVD player and watch it.
And I think the last big thing that Robert Towne did, and I don't know if big is the word to use, but he wrote and directed a movie called Ask the Dusk in 2006 with Colin Farrell and Salma Hayek.
I don't even remember that.
Yeah. So he's 84 years old now.
Mm-hmm.
Can he still hack it, you think?
Well, I don't know. I mean, they're around the same age, Robert Towne and mm-hmm. Jack Nicholson, you know, been in the business for such a long time, but you know, that's, you know, something that he's left behind a lot for a legacy.
Oh yeah. You can't really criticize him too much.
No. And Nicholson too. I mean, Nicholson's mm-hmm. been in so many classic movies.
Mm-hmm.
And you got a guy who looks pretty much just like him in The Shining, and then not in The Doctor's Sleep.
Yeah.
So I don't know where they found that guy.
Probably on the, you know, like Madison Square Garden, or not Madison Square Garden, like just somewhere in New York being a Jack Nicholson impersonator.
I have no idea, but I was like, look at that guy.
Give me that man. You know, running around Times Square with the other guys dressed as Mickey Mouse.
I remember, you know, watching Doctor Sleep a couple of weeks ago in that bar scene, and I was like, where did they find this guy?
Not bad. Not bad at all.
No. So, all right. Well, anyway, that might be something we can look forward to. We don't know. We'll keep you posted on the Chinatown prequel TV series. So, all right. Hey, comedian Kyle Kinane is coming up right after we take a break here on WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It is Tuesday. That means 2 for Tuesday. Get your requests in now. One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200. Coming up in a little bit, we're going to be talking about music. The best cover songs of all time. Play a little bit of those. Talk about those. One Flew of the Cuckoo's Nest premiered in theaters on this date. And we're going to talk about movies that are actually better than the book. and much more. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us via talk or text. Right now, though, I would like to welcome to the show one of my favorite stand-up comedians. This guy is hilarious, and you've seen him on a ton of stuff, Drunk History and At Midnight. He's done all the talk shows, Workaholics, This Is Not Happening, Not Safe with Nikki Glaser, and so many things. He's a great stand-up comedian. He's going to be actually playing at Talia Hall on Monday the 25th and Tuesday the 26th of November, bringing his show Spring Break to Talia Hall, and it starts at 8:30. Tuesday is sold out, but there's still tickets available for Monday the 25th. And I would like to welcome to the show Kyle Kinane. Kyle, welcome to the show, man.
How's it going?
Good, good, good. I think you're hilarious, my friend.
Well, thanks a bunch. Yeah. I appreciate it.
Yeah. So you're
trying my best, you know.
Well, you're doing great, man. So you're from Addison, Illinois, just these parts, right?
Oh yeah, just a clip down Lake Street there.
Yeah,
back somewhere between an Applebee's and a Chili's. You know how it works out that way.
Yeah. Well, what was it like growing up here in the Chicagoland area? Did you have like were you raised in a funny household?
Oh man, yeah, the cultural hot pot of DuPage County. Let me tell you, it was always pretty easy going. It was always pretty much. I don't know. I think everybody was quick to lighten the mood if things were too tense, so mm-hmm. That's probably where it came from. And then, I don't know, I think it's more of a larger Midwest sensibility that, you know, life's not going to be great, so if you're going to complain about it, you better be entertaining while you're complaining about it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, why would anybody want to listen to you? Like, if you're gonna bitch, at least be funny about it. At least give other people a reason to listen. And that's why, like, I try to get all my friends into stand-up, and none of them want to do it. All my friends are funnier than I am, but none of them want to come with me.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and you also studied at Columbia.
Well, who hasn't?
Yeah, I know. I did too. I went there too, Kyle. So,
I think everybody has to go there for at least a few months, right? Isn't that the buffer between community college and the real 4-year school you finally go through?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, but when did you start getting interested in comedy? Have you always, you know, been a fan?
You know, it was one of those things. I always wanted to do stand-up, but I didn't know how to start. You know, like, I didn't know what comedy clubs were. I didn't, you'd watch TV, and I would watch Johnny Carson as a little kid, and then at the end, if there wasn't a band, there'd be a guy just standing there talking.
Right.
I was like, well, how do you get to that? Like,
yeah.
There's no map of how do you get to that. I didn't know what open mics were. And it was actually at Columbia that I met a pal of mine, John Berger, that I saw him in class. I'd done some casting call at Zany's that I read about, and I think it was the Daily Herald. I was like, oh, we'll do this casting call for comics. I'm like, well, here's my chance. This is how you start stand-up. Went, did it, and never knew anything else about it. And then one of the guys from that I saw in my class at Columbia, so I asked him, like, how do you do it? He's like, oh, there's open mics everywhere. This is pre-internet, so you know, I just had to get the copy of the Chicago Reader that had the listing for all the Chicago open mics. And then once I found that was it. I was doing that every night I could.
Mm-hmm. And how did it go at first?
Well, it always goes better than you expect maybe the very first time you do it.
Yeah.
And then never that good again. So it's a drug dealer method. You get the little free bit to get you hooked on it, and then you ruined your life. now you're embroiled in it.
And then you do stand-up around Chicago all over the place?
All over the place. It was I started Mark Geary, who still runs the Lincoln Lodge to this day. It's one of the longest running independent comedy venues, I think, in the country. I think they got that title now. But he used to run an open mic at the Red Lion Pub on Lincoln.
Oh, sure.
Which,
yeah.
I think I don't know if that's still there anymore.
It's not.
It's not. No. Oh, that was fun because I always had like these really burly bodybuilder bartenders there.
Yeah.
If you need some more bees in that sentence, I can get them for you. But all those guys would also talk about how they never wanted to be there when it was closing because it was haunted. There's like a tunnel
right.
that would go from one bar to the back. Like, right. I don't know, I think it's a little kid ghost. I'm like, you are just 300 pounds of all muscle, and you're scared of a child ghost in here. And anyway, here's some jokes. It was a nice environment for creativity and weirdness over there. And then the Lion's Den open mic. That was at a bar on Irving Damon and
Lincoln.
Yeah. So you know that one, and that's no longer there. But that was the big one. That's where a lot of the names you saw, like, they're, you know, coming out of Chicago now. We kind of all cut our teeth over at those two spots.
So, you moved to L.A. in 2003. And how did that go when you first got there?
Well, I figured if I was going to move away from my family and friends to pursue a silly dream, if I was going to be depressed, at least there'd be palm trees in the background. But it's L.A. or New York, and no offense, but I'm not doing, if I'm going to gamble with my life, I'm going to do it where the weather's a little nicer than New York.
Right.
That was really the only motivating factor. I think I knew more people in New York, had more connections in New York. But I was like, but there's a beach. It's hard to be sad at the beach.
Mm-hmm. And so so you just started doing stand-up out there, and the rest is history, correct?
Yeah, same thing. You know, you get the newspaper listing, all the open mics, and you start getting your teeth kicked in every night and find out if you love it enough to keep going through that punishment.
Mm-hmm.
And I did, so yeah, okay, no problem.
Yeah. Well, you're playing, have you ever been to Talia Hall before?
I've been there. This is, I think, the third or fourth time I'm doing a Thanksgiving time show there. It's kind of become an annual thing.
Oh, that's cool.
This is the first time I'm doing two shows. So.
Yeah. Monday the 25th is not sold out, but Tuesday is. I love Talia Hall. I love that place. It's
great.
It's beautiful, man. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm happy to be back there. Like I said, it's the third, fourth time. It's been fun every time. I get different lineups both nights. I've got John Roy, who's also a Chicago comic, coming back. He's there on Tuesday. I got my buddy Shane Torres, who people might know. He's there Monday. I've got Molly Kearney, and I just met her recently. I'm actually out here in L.A., but she's a Chicago comic, and she blew me away. So I was like, yeah, if you're around, do the show. And it's fun. It's like a holiday homecoming thing. Yeah. So it's just a good time.
That's great, man. And people can check it out. It's at Talia Hall, 8:30, and there are tickets available for the Monday, November 25th show. Some of the stuff that you've done, Kyle, you know, I'm a big fan of everything. I really, really miss At Midnight. And I know it was hard. It was Hardwick's
decision.
It was Hardwick's decision to stop it, and I understand that. The guy only had 53 jobs at one point. But
that guy would like get on a jet after the show to go host Good Morning America in New York and fly back. Like, how do you do this? How do people do this?
Yeah, but I thought you killed on At Midnight every single time you were on. You killed, and I just thought it was such a fun show.
Yeah, it was such an excuse to be current, because it was, you were taping it and it was going to air either that night or sometime that week. You were talking about current events. It was a fun atmosphere to just hang out with all your comics, and I don't want to say nobody took it too seriously, but the fact that it was fun to play around. You forgot you were on TV and you thought you were just hanging out with your pals that were other comics.
Yeah, that's what it felt like too.
So I think. I thought that translated to when people watched it. And then even in the studio, I think the audiences were having, like, oh, this is just a real fun comedy show. You kind of forgot that the cameras were there.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. And it was a really nice, it was nice for a lot of you guys, a nice showcase for you guys, you know? I mean, you got these comedians who are on every night, and then suddenly At Midnight's gone. But now David Spade has got that show in that time slot, and he's bringing a lot of the folks that used to be on At Midnight onto his show.
Oh, is that what's going on? That's good to know. It's good to hear that from you and not from show business. Anything else I'm missing?
No, I don't think so. I think that's about it. But no, but I
busted your balls. Your balls.
That's all right, man.
I see that. It's like, oh yeah, that's getting in the same pocket. But just, I mean, and it was. Tough crowd with Colin Quinn. Same thing.
Yeah.
Get comics together to screw around and be themselves. And, let them riff off each other, especially when you're taping it. It's like, you tape some TV shows, you realize you're only watching 22 minutes, and then some places will only give you 30 minutes to get that 22 minutes, whereas At Midnight, it's like, nah, riff, hang out, we'll edit it. It's fine. Have fun with your friends.
And that's what it felt like. It just felt like everybody was having a great time, and that translated, to the living room when I would watch it. And I thought it was great, and I really miss it. But it was great. And you guys, how long would you tape? You said sometimes you get a half an hour, but they would just let you go.
Yeah, I mean, the shows are only 22 minutes long, so outside of, like, it was just the jokes that you'd riff and you'd talk a little bit too long, or they allowed you to do that. They weren't like, all right, no, shut up, we gotta go to this. It's like, no, play around, it's fine.
Yeah, that's cool. How did you like working on Not Safe with Nikki Glaser, another standout on At Midnight?
Oh, that was the one clip that was pretty popular where we were giving lines to adult
right.
film right. stars.
Yes.
And, my thing was like, regardless how you feel about the adult industry, it's still an industry. I'm like,
right.
Well, thanks for letting us kind of make fun of your job.
Right.
I hope you're all right with it. Turns out that porn actors and actresses, pretty easy going. They know what they do for a living, and they're down for having a laugh. So that changed everything. I'm like, yeah, I don't want to be derogatory, but then they were just being fun.
Yeah,
in those clips, like, oh wait, they're funny to begin with. I don't even know why I'm here.
Yeah,
you just let them say this when they're making the regular films.
Yeah,
this would be more entertaining to watch pornography this way. If it's got a little dose of comedy in there. No, the dialogue's never something people are going for.
Right,
you put some good writing in there. I'm like, whoa,
yeah. Whole new audience. All right, Kyle, hang on, okay? Kyle, hold on.
Sure.
All right, Kyle Kinane is with us, an unbelievably funny guy, a great stand-up comedian. He brings Spring Break to the Talia Hall on Monday, November 25th, and Tuesday, November 26th. Tickets are still available for the 25th. Lots more to talk about with Kyle after we take this break here on 720 WGN. Right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. 2 for Tuesday. Get your requests in now. One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200. My guest right now is the very, very funny Kyle Kinane. You can check out his website at kylekinane.com. That's K-I-N-A-N-E. He's coming to town for a couple of gigs at the Talia Hall to do some stand-up, and we'll welcome Kyle back. Kyle, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me back. I hear Wilco, and then I heard some old 97s earlier.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, all right.
So let's talk about Drunk History. Your episode, the Haymarket Riots, is unbelievably funny. Absolutely hilarious. Did you choose that event to cover?
Actually, they were going over there. They we're going to do, we want to talk about Chicago, and I was going over to some other events. And they're like, how about this one? I'm like, oh, well, I guess I need to learn more about my city's own history.
Mm-hmm.
I did study up on it. But as far as how that show went, it's weird to, because you don't see an edit of it. And I love, the people that want to call it fake. No, it's not.
Yeah.
If you've ever drank so much you've blacked out, that's always a thing.
Yeah.
It's even weirder when that blackout is a TV show.
Right.
And you find out exactly what happened.
Yeah.
Alongside millions of other people watching it.
It's got to be very weird. And I think Derek Waters is hilarious. My favorites are always the cutaway to him laughing. That's always my favorite thing, how long did you film and how much did you drink? Because you were bombed by the end of that thing.
Yeah, Nick, those are great questions. I know I woke up the next day because they filmed at my apartment.
Right.
And then I woke up the next day and everything was a little bit cleaner than I normally keep it. And I just kept looking around like, oh, something happened in here. And it took me like 20 minutes in the morning to be like, oh, yeah. You drank a bottle of tequila and you threw up in a bag in front of TV cameras. And so, yeah, that's what happened. And, I don't think I'll say I'm proud of it, but I'm not ashamed.
Yeah, yeah.
I delivered entertainment that was expected for that.
And
I got it two more times.
And I will say
I don't think I'm invited back because I think I'm a liability. So I don't think I'm
well, I will say this about that show, which is a show that I love. it's all historically accurate. Like, Derek Waters, you know, really wants to tell the real story. So even though everybody's getting blitzed while they're telling the story, you learn something. And I'm not kidding. When I watch that show, I not only laugh my ass off, but I learn things, which is weird.
I've had people, you know, teachers that are like, I'm a history teacher, and I play this for my class.
Yeah.
I mean, if you can retain information anyway possible, and you can get it through entertainment, and it's factually correct.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, why not?
Yeah.
Hey, making that tiny little corner of the world better. You laughed at it, but you could also walk away going, I know some facts now.
Yeah. No, it's true.
That's true. Good for the world, right?
Yeah.
That's good for the world.
And your episode was very special, Kyle.
Jesus. It was a real... But I aged a few years that night.
Yeah. Okay, so hey, you are also the voice of Comedy Central. Like when you...
I was.
Oh, you're not anymore.
Yeah, that one's... That job went to my friend David Borey right now.
Oh, okay.
They changed it up, so it was 8 years I was doing that, and it was great. Yeah, they changed things around as things happen in showbiz.
Sure.
I went to a guy that I couldn't be happier. So I was like, yeah, it's a good run.
And also, but you now do a lot of voice work. Do you like doing that?
Yeah, I mean it's when you think about stuff that you've done for money. When it's just, you want to just be a cartoon character that swears a bunch? Yeah, I could do that.
Uh-huh.
I sure can do that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even acting. I wear pajamas into a sound booth.
Yeah.
And say swear words as a drug dog on Paradise PD. Like, oh, yeah. Oh, there's a paycheck with this? That doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
I have to actually go to an accountant and tell him this is how I got money in my account. That doesn't seem like how the world should work. I will be very grateful for that kind of work anytime it comes along.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. So would you like being on the road, Kyle?
That might be a more complicated question than I anticipate. I do. I mean, it's all I want to do. I'm trying to maybe tour some slightly larger venues a little bit less of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, being away kind of takes its toll. You know, I'm sure you've heard all the road stories from musicians and comics and trying to maintain a home life, but then your job means you leave for X amount of days out of the year. And for a while, I didn't mind, as a single man out traveling, didn't have any responsibilities. I got a nice lady in my life, which if she's here, she's listening to me, so I'm saying that to butter up. And but no, I like being at home now. You know, I'm 42. I gave my life and my liver to stand up throughout my 20s and most of my 30s.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's like, oh yeah, no, I like being home. So if I'm gonna leave, it's gotta be, I'm like, all right, I'm not saying make it worth it, because I'll do wherever. Don't make Rooch. I'm on the radio interview, Rachel. Trying to distract me. This is what, man, you know what? I love being on the road. Being on the road's great. No distractions. That's why it's great. I started touring, and I was just going on, you know, Facebook or wherever, like, hey, I'm going to be in this city. I'm going to be in Oklahoma City, and I'm going to be in St. Louis. And I've got these dates open in between. So if you're along this highway anywhere and you want to put on a comedy show, I'll do it. And I'll still put that attitude towards it. I was in Northern California just this past weekend, but I was flying into Medford, Oregon, and I was going to have a night off. But I'm like, no, you know what? Let's see. Hey, anybody in Medford want to do a comedy show? Why not? I'm going to want to do it.
That's amazing that you said Medford, Oregon, because that's where my ex-wife lives now. So maybe she came to see your show.
Oh boy, is that Medford? I started the show at Medford. I'm like, how's it going? But no, really, it looked rough. It was.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, it didn't. It didn't look like things were going great in Medford for a while. No offense. Hey, no offense to your ex-wife. I know nothing of the situation you're in. But if that was your choice after Chicago, or I don't know.
Yeah, Yeah, yikes. Well, that was her choice. She left Chicago to go to Medford. So,
okay.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well,
I've never been, so
no,
I don't know.
It's no Bakersfield. Okay. But I still had a fun show.
Yeah.
So to go back to the tour thing. Yeah, I'm not gonna go freewheeling it for 2 months away from home anymore. But I'm gone most of this month, and then a lot of I think most of February, March, April next year, and then I take off. I try to go live my life. You know, I can't just write comedy about being in airports and hotels. I'm gonna live my life.
Yeah,
and then report back on that. So then that's what the rest of the year.
How often do you how often do you write, Kyle?
Oh, all the time. I mean, it's never going to be. The process slows down when you first start comedy. You haven't heard other people's comedy or anything, so you write jokes about every single thing you see, and you process it all through this new filter you've applied, and it's great because you don't second guess your creativity and your imagination, and you just write. At least that's how I did. I wrote about everything, and eventually you're like, oh, that joke is what somebody else does. That joke is actually just like this other one, but I didn't know that. It's just like, oh, you make a joke about everything. So the process slows down a little bit, but it never stops. It's always going to be, and you know, it's not so much, boy, did I get drunk and have this crazy story happen. I don't want that to happen. I'm 42. It starts to get sad when you have those stories.
Yeah.
If you're 23 and you're like, I got drunk last night, I don't even know where my pants are, but then the cops were the ones that bought me Denny's. Like, that's fun. Like, that's a fun story, and you should have that. But if you're in your 40s and that's still your story you're coming back with,
yeah.
Hey, man, you might need to get into a program and get your life together a little bit. So those aren't my stories as much anymore.
Right.
But if you're good at comedy, you should be able to write about anything. So that's the challenge right now.
Mm-hmm.
But I have not ever gotten sick of that challenge. Of everything else that I've tried and quit and or failed at within a brief amount of time, comedy is the only one that like, oh, I'm going to keep doing this regardless.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I may as well try and make a few bucks off of it because it's the only thing I want to keep doing.
Well, you're great at it, man. I'm a huge fan and have been for a long time. Kyle Kinane, Spring Break is coming to Talia Hall, 8:30 showtime on Monday the 25th and on Tuesday the 26th. Tuesday is sold out, but there are tickets available for the Monday show. Go out and see Kyle Kinane. Check out KyleKinane.com. Kyle, real pleasure having you on the show, man. It was great talking to you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it, Nick.
Okay, take care, buddy.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
There you go. Kyle Kinane, everybody. Local boy makes good. Unbelievably funny guy. Go see him at Talia Hall. He's one of my favorites. It was great having him on. Okay, let's take a quick break here for the news on 720 WGN. All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline studio here on 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday. One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Who requested that?
So that was Alana Miles with Still Got This Thing For You from the coolest Canuck of all time, Canadian Bill.
Okay. All right. Well, welcome back, everybody. Hey, speaking of music, we're about to jump into best cover songs of all time. And there's a lot of them. And sometimes you look at a song and you go, that was a cover? Because I was looking at this this list of what they consider the top 100 cover songs of all time. And I was surprised to see some of the songs. I had no idea they were covers. Sam sends in a text. By the way, call us or text us with your favorite cover songs. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Sam says, good morning, Nick and crew. I think a pretty great cover is "Pretty Woman" by Van Halen. Yeah, they've got a bunch of Van Halen has a bunch of good covers. "You Really Got Me" is an unbelievable cover. Of course, 773 record says Nick Cave's cover of Neil Young's "Helpless." I don't think I've ever heard that.
It's good. Like, yeah. If anybody's going to cover Neil Young, Nick Cave is one of those guys.
Yeah. Swan's cover of Joy Division's "Love Will Tear Us Apart." You've got to be familiar with that, right?
Yeah, very. I'm a big fan of both Swans and Joy Division. Level Tear Us Apart is probably my favorite song ever been recorded. And their version of it is a really interesting take.
Oh, yeah.
They're a strange band, Swans. They do some really experimental stuff, but they do a very good cover of that.
219 area code says, Nick, the best cover of all time is Jimi Hendrix's version of Bob Dylan's All Along the Watchtower, enough said. Yeah, that might very well be the best cover of ever. Even Dylan says that his version doesn't even come close to what Hendrix did with it.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, here are some other ones. Frank Sinatra, I've Got You Under My Skin. Coil, Tainted Love. Originally released by Gloria Jones in 1964. Coil, Tainted Love. I'm not familiar with that. I'm familiar with Soft Cell's version. And I love Soft Cell's version of it. The B-52s covered Downtown by Petula Clark. Can we find that? Tom, can you find that? B-52s in 1979, they covered Downtown. I've never heard it. That's pretty great. They definitely B-52'd it.
That is, to say the least. That's a strange band. I've never really understood. I mean, I like the B-52s. I like them, but just thinking that this is a group of people that formed in Athens, Georgia.
Yes.
People must have been looking at them like they were freaks or something.
Yeah.
Like, with the big hair, the beehives, and all that kind of stuff.
Fred Schneider.
Yeah. What a voice.
He's got a great voice.
We used to play an improv game called Hey, Fred Schneider. And you just get in a circle and you say, Hey, Fred Schneider, what are you doing? And you point to someone. And they have to respond with like an activity that they're doing, but it's in Fred Schneider's voice. just to loosen you up, get you warm.
I was going to say, what skills does that develop in improv?
It develops how to sing like Fred Schneider.
Oh. All right. There's a monster in my pants, and he does a naughty dance. Monster! That's from his solo. Monster. Here's a great one that they've got next that they're talking about. Chaka Khan, I Feel For You. Which, of course, Prince recorded first. But Chaka Khan's version of I Feel For You is fantastic. And it also has that fantastic Chaka Khan. Chaka Khan. At the beginning, Chaka Khan. I love that song.
Prince was really good at writing songs and just knowing when to give them to other people.
He wrote so many songs. I mean,
it's shocking.
It's crazy the amount of songs that Prince wrote. For other people, for himself. I mean, he was one of the most prolific artists of all time.
Legend has it that every room in his house was mic'd for sound.
Yeah. Yeah.
I assume that's true.
I don't know. I also have read that there is a massive amount of unreleased stuff that's in his house or in the possession of his family, in his estate. But all he did was record. That's all he did. He would write songs and record constantly. I mean, I can't imagine the treasure trove and the amount of songs that are out there.
I'm guessing if they wanted to, the Prince estate as a legal entity could probably release a new Prince album every year till the end of the world.
I would not, that wouldn't surprise me one bit.
I hope they do. I really hope they do. because they recently released a bunch of stuff that was Prince, I think it was called Originals.
Yeah.
And it was like the original version of Nothing Compares to You, Manic Monday. They're getting it out there. They're trying to show people that, hey, we have this backlog of stuff that you may not have heard.
All right, how about this? The Shins, We Will Become Silhouettes, which is a cover of a song by the Postal Service. I'm not familiar with that.
It's kind of early 2000s indie, things that would probably show up on the Garden State soundtrack.
Oh, sure.
That era of music.
Yeah. What was the band on the Garden State soundtrack? There was like one specific band that they used the music of in Garden State.
Well, I know it made the Shins really popular.
It made the Shins popular, but there was more. I mean, it was... Look up the Garden State soundtrack. Let's go through the track listings. Because I know Colin Hay is it. There's a song
by
Colin
Hay. Yeah, Colin Hay is on there. Nick Drake.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Got to have that. You can't be a young indie-loving man without Nick Drake. Iron and Wine, Coldplay is on there.
Mm-hmm.
Back when Coldplay was still cool. 07, Thievery Corporation. Some Simon and Garfunkel.
I just know that the song, the Colin Hay song, is it I Just Can't Get Over You?
Yeah, I just don't think I'll ever get over
God.
You. It's great.
It's a great song. Beautiful, heartbreaking song. So, all right, let's take a break here. When we come back, we're talking about great cover songs. Which ones do you love? Which ones would you vote for? 312-981-7200.
You wanted all along. I was taught to fight, taught to win. I never thought I could fail. No fight left, no soul to see. I am a man whose dreams are all deserted. I've changed my face.
Welcome back. Is that Two for Tuesday?
Yes, it is. So it's,
wow.
Yeah, so it's very fitting for the conversation.
Yeah.
Because it is, and this is a rare find. Canadian Bill went deep here, and a little trouble finding it, but it's Alana Miles and Michael Sadler from Saga.
Wow!
Doing Don't Give Up, originally by Peter Gabriel and Kate Bush.
Yeah, I thought that was Michael Sadler.
Yeah, that's him.
From Saga. All right. All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are talking about cover versions of songs. What are the best ones? We'll pull some of these up to listen to them if we've never heard them before. Some of them are weird, some of them are pretty awesome, but there's a lot of great cover songs out there. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Here's Neil on WGN. Hi, Neil.
Hello, Nick. It's good to hear you again, sir.
Yeah, what's up?
First thing I thought of when you mentioned this topic this morning was Venus by Shocking Blue, which was the original.
Right.
And then somewhere around 15 to 20 years later, Bananarama did the remake.
Yeah, Bananarama did the remake of Venus, and it was a big hit for them. But the Shocking Blue version was the one that I remember when I was a kid.
And of course there was a strange thing about that. We find out later that not a single person in Shocking Blue could speak English.
Right, that's true. It's absolutely true.
They had to learn the song phonetically. I think it was.
Yep. I think you're right. Okay, Neil. Thanks.
All right.
Take care.
All right. Thanks.
There you go.
Sir.
Is that the song from those Lady Razor commercials?
Yeah. The band Shocking Blue, I want to say it was 1960, because I was a kid. I want to say it was 1969 or 1970 when Shocking Blue's version of Venus came out. And it was a huge hit, and it's a great song. And then Bananarama had a hit in the 80s with it. So
I can't remove myself from seeing, like, you know, women on the beach shaving their legs to that song.
Yeah.
It's so weird.
Well, that's because the name of the razor is Venus.
Exactly.
Right.
So now, I mean, the marketing worked, I guess.
Ah. All right. Now, I've never heard this before. Karen O, Trent Reznor, and Atticus Ross covering Immigrant Song.
Yes, you have. Have you seen The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
It's at the opening. And
yeah.
It's really, I loved it. I thought it was amazing.
Yeah. Okay. Now I remember. Okay. Speaking of songs from movies, Urge Overkill, Girl, You'll Be a Woman Soon. Neil Diamond originally recorded it in 1967. And it's used in, of course, Pulp Fiction. And it's great, too. It's absolutely great. How about this? The Rolling Stones, Time Is On My Side. Kay Winding was the original. It's an R&B standard from 1963. It did a lot of, I think the Stones did a lot of covers.
Especially early on.
In their early days, yeah.
Well, because that's what all those guys were doing, really. They were just trying to imitate the 50s rockers that they grew up listening to in the soul and R&B. And then they used that to build upon their legacy.
Anthrax, Got the Time. Originally released by Joe Jackson in 1979.
That's an interesting choice.
I don't know. The only Anthrax cover that I... that pops into my head immediately is Bring the Noise, even though Public Enemy's on it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a cover.
We've got a little bit of Got the Time if you want.
All right.
Wake up, got another day to get through now, got another man to see, got a call on the telephone, well, got a lot of something to do. Sit down, got another letter to write, think hard, got a little letter to write, give a minute on the telephone, one on, got a lot of another man to see.
I like Anthrax.
I still can't get over, like, I keep thinking whenever I think Anthrax, I think of the fact that Scott Ian was a talking head on VH1 for, like,
oh, yeah.
15 years.
Oh, yeah. He and his beard. Yeah. All right, so Jenny Lewis and the Watson Twins featuring M. Ward, Connor Oberst, and Ben Gibbard covered Handle With Care by the Traveling Wilburys. Never heard this before. Jenny Lewis had got the right friends to cover the Traveling Wilburys song. This was released, the cover version of Handle With Care was released in 2006. Yeah. Handle With Care.
I mean, that's an amazing, amazing song.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you got guys, you know, it's George Harrison, Roy Orbison, Tom Petty, Bob Dylan, and Jeff Lynne, for God's sake. I mean,
I've got a little bit of the Jenny Lewis version.
All right.
Let's take a listen.
Been beat up and battered around. Been sent up and I've been shot down. You're the best thing that I've ever found. And reputations changeable, situations tolerable. Baby, you're adorable. Handle me with care. I'm so tired.
This is good. That's really good.
Very nice.
Yeah.
When I saw ELO, Donnie Harrison was the opener, so him and Jeff Lynne did it.
Oh, they did.
Yeah, it was really nice.
Yeah.
It was really nice to hear Donnie singing his dad's parts.
Very cool. All right. We're talking about cover versions of songs. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. 312-981-7200. And so there you go. Let's take a break. When we come back, we got more here, and we want to hear from you. We are talking about cover versions of songs. 312-981-7200. Be right back.
It's not unusual to be loved by anyone. It's not unusual to have fun with anyone. But when I see you hanging about.
Oh, boy. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, 2 for Tuesday. You made it for Tuesday. Who requested the Tom Jones?
It's coming to us from Big Ed.
Big Ed. God, my mom loved Tom Jones.
Mine too.
Used to watch his show. He had a variety show in the 70s. Used to watch it every week and then get on the phone with one of her best friends and talk about the show about how great it was and how great Tom Jones is. It was ridiculous. They would be like giddy. Hey, speaking of covers, what about Tom Jones's cover of Kiss?
Oh my God! Yeah,
it's fantastic.
I forgot about that.
Yeah,
it's pretty good.
It's awesome. It's awesome. It's a Tom Jones cover of Kiss by Prince. we are talking about cover versions of songs. Mike in Manuka says Love Hurts by Nazareth was originally by the Everly Brothers. Foo Fighters do a great version of Baker Street, according to 323. That's true. Have you heard their cover of Baker Street?
Yeah, it's great. Nuts.
It's great. 204 area code, Street Heart did a great version of the Stones' Under My Thumb. 708 area code says, best cover song, Slayer covered Inagata De Vida. I've heard that.
It's awesome.
Yeah. Oh, this is a truly great one. 574 area code, Ring of Fire by Social Distortion. Great. Caribbean Bob said, Disturbed cover of Sound of Silence is better than the original. I don't know. I don't know if I'd go that far, but
yeah. Well, it was a very popular cover, though.
Oh, completely.
It got them a ton of attention. They charted with it.
It was huge. No, it was huge, but it's not as good as the original. I mean, I like the version that they did, but Husker Du's cover of The Birds' 8 Miles High is insanely great. Says the 920 area code. As is everything that Husker Du does. 773 area code says Till There Was You, The Beatles. Rollover Beethoven, ELO. Sure, that's a great one. Hey, Nick, it's Gabriel in Lincoln Square. I have two. Chris Cornell's cover of Nothing Compares to You, outstanding. Tom Waits' Jersey Girl. 309 area code, Jeff Beck with Rod Stewart, People Get Ready. Fantastic. Fantastic.
We've definitely had that on a few requests for a twofer.
Yeah.
Or triple play. I remember playing it quite a bit.
It's great. It's great. All right. Let's see. Here's Mark on WGN. Hi, Mark.
Good morning. Great morning. Topic once again. And I was on hold listening to you just mention all those other covers. Some of them I've forgotten. And it's like, wow. Yeah, they were great. But mine is, of course, Joe Cocker with a little help of my friends, the Beatles.
Yeah. Now, you know, he did a lot of covers.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Joe Cocker did a lot of covers, and he made them his own. Yeah.
And he did it also at the first Woodstock, believe it or not.
Yeah. Now, Joe Cocker is something else, man.
And, of course, the parody with him and John Belushi on Saturday Night Live.
Right, classic. But, yeah, no, yeah. I guess that, I mean, because he's done a number of covers, I guess, with a little help from my friends, is probably the quintessential Joe Cocker cover.
You know, and every time I would hear it at first, and hear some of his stuff, I'd think, well, what did someone really hear in him, say, in some club before he made it? And the more I listened to him, and the more, I mean, he definitely was unique. And I got accustomed to, you know, to his voicing and stuff. But, again, a great cover, and I love your show.
Thanks, Mark.
We'll talk again.
Right, have a good day. Well, Joe Cocker had an unbelievably soulful voice. So I love that he had a small role in Across the Universe.
It would have been weird not to have him.
Yeah.
And he's funny.
He's singing Come Together, which is, you know.
And he's like a bum, and then he's a pimp.
Yeah.
Like, it's a fun little thing to have him in there.
Yeah. It was great to have him in. Yeah. I love that movie. I love that movie. And I get so much flack for liking Across the Universe. And I love the versions of those songs. I love the versions of the Beatles songs in the movie. And I especially love I Want to Hold Your Hand.
Oh, yeah.
That arrangement and the delivery is so beautiful and heartbreaking. It's one of my favorite moments in the entire movie.
And it's nice that they make it their own, you know? That they're not just going to try to do direct versions of it.
Julie Taymor, man.
Very talented.
Incredible.
Except for that whole Spider-Man thing.
Oh, yeah.
That didn't work out super well. But
not.
Still great.
Yeah, did not. Did you see Titus?
I did. And I think she also, was she involved with The Tempest? There was a movie version of The Tempest with Helen Mirren.
Yes.
That was pretty interesting.
She's something. She really is. All right. Here's Ike on WGN. Go ahead, Ike.
Hey, Nick. How's it going with you, man?
All right.
Yeah, this is a very cover song that always comes up in my head a lot. I first heard this back in 1999. That's how I discovered the original. And for some reason, I don't know, I call this my theme song. I don't know why, but I just like the beat of it. It's the cover of Blue Monday by Orgy. Is the New Order song.
Blue Monday. Sure. I know the New Order song, sure.
Yes. Yeah. Did you listen to the Orgy version?
I have heard it, yes.
Yeah. What do you think of it?
I like it. Yeah.
Yeah. I also like the original as well. I like them both.
Yeah. Good stuff. All right, Ike, thanks.
No problem.
All right. Yeah. Blue Monday. How do you feel about that cover?
I mean, I can see why people like it. It was a fairly popular cover.
Yeah.
But when it comes to anything New Order or Joy Division, I'm a little bit of a purist at times. And I mean, have you heard the cover version?
Yeah.
I mean, it's cool. It's a little bit more edgy. And anybody who's willing to pay homage to the number one selling 12-inch single of all time, that's what it is. More power to them. But it's not something I'm going to put on if I can't listen to the original.
Blur covered Maggie May. In 1992, Blur covered Maggie May, the Rod Stewart classic. I was not aware of that.
It's pretty good, too. I've got a little bit of it.
All right. Here. Blur.
Not a Blur person?
No, I mean, it's Blur. I do like the use of... I love that that Edgar Wright used the Blur song when they're waiting outside the bank. And then Jamie Foxx gets in the car and Baby guns the car and the pipes go through his chest.
Yeah.
There's a Blur song playing. Yeah. And then right after that, when they get out and the foot chase begins, it's Hocus Pocus by Focus. So he's got a Blur song and a Focus song back to back. Smart-ass Edgar Wright.
Why hasn't anybody covered Hocus Pocus yet?
Don't cover Hocus Pocus by Focus. That's the best sequence in that movie, too.
Oh, it totally is.
I mean, it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
I love that movie.
They did a great job.
I love it. You know, and I'm not a Jamie Foxx guy, kind of at all. I mean, he's great in Baby Driver. I loved him in Baby Driver. Never been a big fan. But, that's a good movie. All right, here's Mike on WGN. Hi, Mike.
Hey, good morning, Nick. I want to say one of the best covers that ever bring a tear to my eye in the video. It's Johnny Cash covering Hurt.
Yeah, it's one of the best. That's actually absolutely one of the greatest covers of all time. It is. Yeah. Yeah. And it's and he made it his own, and it's real personal, and the video is heartbreaking. I think that's widely considered to be one of the best covers of all time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all I wanted to add.
Okay, thanks, Mike.
Thank you.
All right. Here's Mark on WGN. Hi, Mark.
Al Green from Cleveland.
Yes.
I wanted to mention Talking Heads' version of Al Green's Take Me to the Limit for two reasons. First, because it became iconic on its own, and second, because it outsold competing covers by Blind Fairy and Foghat that were released around the same time.
Wait, Foghat did a cover of Take Me to the River?
That's what I've heard, yeah.
What? I'd like to hear that. But the Talking Heads version is fantastic. It's fantastic. Uh-huh. And it's one of the most identifiable Talking Heads songs of all time. So, all right,
and
thanks.
The thing is, yeah, it succeeds because it's totally different than the Al Green version while keeping the spirit of it.
Yeah, it's true. All right, Mark, thanks.
Have a great show.
Fog Hat?
Yeah, here's a, it's, I think it's pretty good. Here's a little Fog Hat doing Take Me to the River.
Foghat.
I don't mind that at all. I don't mind that at all. Good job, Foghat.
Foghat.
Do we have an origin story behind that name?
I don't know where the name comes from, but I had a bunch of their albums in the 70s.
Oh, who didn't?
I had Foghat Live was the one that everybody owned. I had Fool for the City. But Foghat Live was the big one. That album was massive. We've already played this one in the past. 1,000 Homo DJs, Supernaut, mm-hmm. Their cover of Black Sabbath, Supernaut, which is a great one. Sid Vicious cover of My Way.
Of course he would. Of course.
Yeah. Sixpence, None the Richer, There She Goes. They covered There She Goes by The Lahs?
Yeah, and it's a really good one. It was really popular when I was quite young. Like I did not know that this was not the official version.
Mm-hmm.
When I first heard it, I was just like, oh, this is a great new song, and it was super popular for a while. And I think it pays a decent amount of homage.
There she goes again, racing through.
It's real close to the original.
Yeah. It's more of a compliment.
Yeah.
It's very bubbly, though.
Everybody Knows by Leonard Cohen was covered by Concrete Blonde. What? What movie do you think of whenever I say Leonard Cohen, Everybody Knows?
You're not going to like what I say.
What?
Justice League.
Get out of here.
I'm serious.
Get out of here.
I'm sorry.
It's Pump Up the Volume, man. Which is such a great movie.
Mm-hmm.
Eric Clapton, Cocaine.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, that's a classic. Marilyn Manson, Sweet Dreams Are Made of This.
he did a couple of decent covers.
Yeah. That was huge, though. I remember the video was played all the time.
His Tainted Love was used quite a bit when that came out.
Yeah. I remember because my first ex-wife, she was freaked out by Marilyn Manson. Like, she couldn't, like, the Beautiful People, if that video came on, she's like, you change it right now.
Turn off MTV2.
Just get it off now. So she hated Sweet Dreams because she was freaked. Marilyn Manson freaked her out.
He's a freaky guy when he's in character.
Well, yeah. And also, I love The Beautiful People. I'm not a big Marilyn Manson guy, but I love that song and I adore that video. I think that video is fantastic, but it totally would freak out my wife. She's like, get it off now. I'm not going to be able to sleep for the next 3 nights.
Very strange man.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Quiet Riot, Come On, Feel the Noise, covering Slade.
Mm-hmm.
I prefer the Slade version.
Really?
Yeah, but I like the Quiet Riot version.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, is that, unfortunately, the Quiet Riot version just totally eclipsed Slade's legacy, because Quiet Riot was just popular for longer.
Yeah. The Doors, Alabama song, Whiskey Bar.
Now, I did not know that that was even a cover.
That's a song from 1930.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
And I know you don't like The Doors, but I think
no.
I think it's a good song. I like that song.
Can't stand The Doors. Jackson 5's cover of Who's Loving You, which is a Miracles song. Cap'n Jazz, they're Midwest emo pioneers, I guess. They did Take On Me.
Yeah, and it's I used to actually play this a lot when I was in college on my college radio station. It's kind of a intentionally bad cover. It's very sloppy.
Uh-huh.
And the vocal, like, they try to hit the high notes and it just doesn't work.
I've heard this. I've heard it. I just didn't know who it was.
Yeah,
but I've heard that before.
It's fun.
Yeah, it's fine. I just didn't know Cap'n Jazz.
Cap'n Jazz.
I don't know. I never heard of them before. But all right, let's take a quick break here. Phone lines are open. Text lines are going. 312-981-7200. Cover songs is what we're talking about and listening to right here on WGN.
What's new, pussycat? Whoa! What's new, pussycat? Pussycat, pussycat, I've got flowers and lots of hours to spend with you. So go and bother your cute little pussycat.
There you go. That concludes the twofer of Tom Jones.
Yeah!
312-981-7200 is the phone number. Coming up at 5, Steve Grzanich has the opening bell, and the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All right. Bunch of texts are coming in. We're talking about cover versions of songs. 708 area code, Janis Joplin saying Me and Bobby McGee. It was written by Kris Kristofferson, first performed by Kris Kristofferson. Nick, not that anyone should attempt to cover the King of Pop, but Alien Ant Farm slayed it with Smooth Criminal. I totally agree. I can't stand the Michael Jackson version, but I love the Alien Ant Farm version. Love it.
That might have been the only hit they ever had.
Yeah, I think you're right. Faith No More's cover of Easy, fantastic.
Mike Patton, right? That's,
yep.
Yeah, he's an incredible vocalist.
One of the best frontmen ever.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. And they not only is the cover of Easy great, their cover of War Pigs is phenomenal. And they every time I've seen Faith No More, I've seen Faith No More like 5-6 times. And they usually close with War Pigs, with their cover of War Pigs, and it's great. Doc says, Nick, Frank released My Way in 1969, but Elvis had a pretty good cover in 73. Sid Vicious covered it too. Just a thought, Jeff Beckley's cover of Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah. Well, that's considered widely maybe the best cover of all time. And I'm looking at this list here, and it's number one.
It's an incredible rendition.
It is. The Lemonheads with Mrs. Robinson.
Always fun.
262 area code. Oh, yeah. Charles Bradley covering Black Sabbath. Changes. That's unbelievable. I remember the first time I heard it, I was just like beside myself.
Is that the version of Changes that plays for the theme of Big Mouth on Netflix?
Yes.
Okay, because I was like, I can't believe Charles Bradley did Sabbath. What Sabbath song did he do?
Changes.
It's incredible.
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. Rage Against the Machine did Maggie's Farm, 815 area code says. 815 says, Nick, Grand Funk Railroad covered Locomotion by Little Eva and had a massive hit with it. Their cover was huge. And then the Jayhawks covered Bad Time from Grand Funk, which is outstanding.
All right.
Let's check out the phones. Here is Officer Callahan on WGN. Hello.
How you doing, sir?
All right. What's up?
Oh, nothing, man. I was listening to your show for the last hour. I had to throw in Iron Maiden does Cross-Eyed Mary by Jethro.
Oh, yes, they do.
Yes,
they do.
And does a great job of it.
Yep, absolutely. I totally forgot about that. That's a great version.
Yes, it is, sir.
Yeah. Okay, officer, take care.
Appreciate it.
All right, buddy.
See y'all later.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
Let's see. Here is Warren on WGN. Hi, Warren.
Nick. Great show as usual.
Thank you.
Been listening since a long time, since the Broham days.
Oh, thank you. That's a long time. I appreciate that.
Carlos Santana's cover version of Black Magic Woman. A lot of people don't remember that was originally a Fleetwood Mac song.
That's right. That's right.
That's kind of made it his own, but I mean, Peter Green, I mean, what can you say about him? He was just so great.
Yeah, he was. Santana did make it their own, and some people probably didn't even realize that it was a cover because that song is so identified with Santana, you know?
Yeah, there's a great Peter Green documentary on Amazon Prime, if you want to check that out.
Oh, okay.
It's really good.
Oh, good.
And I think Locomotion was the number one song three different times in three decades.
I think you're right. I remember
Kylie Minogue being the last one, I believe.
I remember the Grand Funk version was massive. It was huge hit for them.
Yeah, I was like 13, I think.
Yeah, I was a kid, too. All right, Warren, thanks, buddy.
Great.
Okay, take
great
care.
Great show, Nick.
Thank you, buddy.
Thanks.
Here's Jamie on WGN. Hi, Jamie.
Hey, Nick, you brought up Prince earlier. I'd like to share two songs with you you're probably not familiar with. The first one would be Prince covered Jimi Hendrix, Red House.
Mm.
Called the Purple House.
Okay.
It came out on a compilation of Jimi Hendrix covers. But the best version is his live version off his 2000 video.
Mm-hmm.
And then his number one cover of all time is Just My Imagination, which is on a bootleg.
Oh, okay. All right,
and,
very cool. All right, Jamie, thanks.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. The Raincoats covered Lola by the Kinks? I don't know if I'm familiar with the Raincoats. I'm certainly familiar with Lola. So
it's a very interesting cover.
Yeah.
I've got a little bit of it here if you want.
All right.
She walked up to me and she asked me to dance. I asked her name and in a dark brown voice she said, Lola. Hello, L.A. Lola. La, 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 Lola. I'm not the worst, most physical guy.
I've heard this. Yeah, I've heard it. Hello, L.A. I have to say, I have to mention this. A buddy of mine who did sound for the Factory Theater, who is a DJ and has been listening to music his whole life, didn't realize until maybe 15 years ago, when I was talking to him about this, 10, 15 years ago, that the song was about a transvestite. Didn't know it until like years. We were listening to it. In fact, we had an opening night party for one of our shows at the Factory. We were in the space and he was DJing and somebody requested they play Lola. He played it and he was listening to it and he's like, oh my God, wait a minute. Is this about a transvestite? And I'm like, yeah, where have you been? What the hell? I mean, it's not like it's subtle in any way.
No. Is I'm Waiting for the Man by the Velvet Underground about heroin?
I don't know, man. I was like, how can you? The song came out in 1970. This was in like the 2000s when he realized this. And I was like, are you kidding me?
Shocking. Shocking stuff.
Wait a minute. Sturgill Simpson covered In Bloom.
Oh, and this is great, too. This is great. I mean, I can't even believe that he would...
Let's save it for after.
Yeah, absolutely.
After we break for the news. But I had no idea. Sturgill Simpson covered In Bloom.
It's by Nirvana. Very good.
Okay. Well, we're going to hear that. The Animals, House of the Rising Sun. That goes without saying. Whitney Houston, I Will Always Love You, taken from the Dolly Parton song. And you want to talk about a song that you couldn't stop. That song was everywhere in 1992. That stupid Bodyguard movie. Oh, my God.
At least we got a good song out of it.
What?
You don't like that song?
No, I can't stand it.
Oh, I think it's good.
I can't stand it. I don't mind Dolly Parton's version. I can't stand Whitney Houston's version.
That's about somebody. I can't remember who, though.
It's about her her partner. She used to have a writing partner, Dolly Parton's writing partner.
Yeah.
And she was going, she and her producer, writing partner, producer, and she was going solo, and she wrote that song about it. So, all right. News is coming up after this.
They say Spain is pretty, though I've never been. Daniel says it's the best place I've ever seen. Oh, and he should know he's been there enough. Lord, I miss
Daniel. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline Studio. 18 stories about beautiful downtown Chicago here till 5. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. The great Steve Cochran at 6 has your morning drive. It's Tuesday, 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday. Who requested the Elton John?
It's coming to us from Lou.
Lou. Okay. Welcome back, everybody. And we are talking about cover versions of songs and some surprising ones that I didn't know were that were covered. If you guys want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200 for talk and text. So before the break, I discovered that Sturgill Simpson covered In Bloom by Nirvana. I was not aware of this. Can we hear a little bit of it?
He's a one who likes all our pretty songs and likes to sing home and likes to shoot his gun. Don't know what means. Don't know what it means to love someone.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's from his second album, A Sailor's Guide to Earth, which was written for his son.
Oh.
He had just had a son, and he wanted to make an album to be his guide through, you know, his whole life.
Mm. I like Sturgill Simpson.
Very cool guy.
Yeah. The Postal Service, they covered Against All Odds, the Phil Collins. Against All Odds, the Take a Look at Me Now.
I think that was in the movie Wicker Park.
It was in the movie Against All Odds.
Oh, God.
I don't know if it was in the movie Wicker Park, but I know it was in the movie Against All Odds.
Yeah.
Jeff Bridges, Rachel Ward, James Woods, Alex Karras. Directed by Taylor Hackford. Mr. Helen Mirren. He's directed some great movies, Taylor Hackford. Let's see. We got some people on the line here. Here is Jack on WGN. Hi, Jack.
Hello.
Hi.
Yes, one of my favorite covers of all time is Elvis Presley covering Something by the Beatles.
Yeah, that's a great version of it. Great version of it.
My favorite version that he ever did of it was live from Honolulu,
mm-hmm.
which was, at the time was one of the largest broadcasts of all time around the world. And he does it towards the beginning of the set. And it's a George Harrison Dark Horse cover. He lowers the key to get that low Elvis Presley part of his voice out, and his phrasing is brilliant. And in the history of Elvis Presley and the Beatles, there's been some lore as maybe Elvis didn't like the Beatles so much because they changed the course of music. But actually, there's evidence that Elvis Presley loved the Beatles. He met with the Beatles at one time. The Beatles came into Graceland to meet with Elvis Presley, and he was noodling around on a bass guitar, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
But his version of Something by the Beatles is absolutely fabulous.
Yeah, it's great. All right, Jack, thanks. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Here is Big Ed on WGN. Go ahead, Ed.
Morning, Nick. Earlier, just a little bit ago, you played some Elton John. How about his cover of Lucy in the Sky?
Yep.
But one of my favorite covers of all time is Rare Earth cover of Set Me Free by the Supremes.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
That's a great song, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a great song. Rare Earth did a few good covers.
In fact, I heard that the guy that ran Motown used to get upset because their covers of the black artists were charting higher than the originals.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the reasons he signed them up, and he like gave them their own label just so they would quit competing with these other people.
Yeah.
But that set me free. That's a great song.
It's great. Absolutely great. All right, Ed, thanks.
Take care, Nick.
See you, buddy. The Fugees, Killing Me Softly. Never been a big fan.
You don't like that one?
No. I prefer the original, like, vastly over that.
Yeah.
Wait, Lord covered Swingin' Party by the Mats? What? What are we talking about here? So she, and this is a, by the way, this is a deep cut. If you're a Replacements fan, this is a real deep cut. So the fact that Lord covered it is interesting.
Got a little bit of it here.
All right.
Bring your own lampshade. Somewhere there's a party. Here it's never ending. Can't remember when it started. Pass around the lampshade. There'll be plenty enough room in jail. If being wrong's a crime, I'm serving forever.
This is pretty great. I gotta say, that's pretty great.
Not bad. She also does a cover of a very dark cover of Everybody Wants to Rule the World.
Oh, I've heard that.
Because I think that was on a Hunger Games soundtrack at
some
point.
Yeah, it is. It is. Yeah. Willie Nelson, Georgia on My Mind. Legendary. Bon Iver, I Can't Make You Love Me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which is a perfect song. It's one of my favorite songs ever.
It's Bonnie Raitt, right?
It's Bonnie Raitt. It's one of my favorite songs ever in the history of anything. Proud Mary, Ike and Tina Turner. Let's see. Mark Ronson and Amy Winehouse covered Valerie by the Zootens.
Yeah. That's one that a lot of people don't know that it is a cover.
Yeah,
because the Amy Winehouse version was really, really popular.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's originally by a band from New Zealand, the Zootons.
The Zootons, okay. Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, Stagger Lee. I've heard that version. It's pretty cool.
That whole album is so good. Murder Ballads.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Oh, great cover. This is one of my favorite covers. Bauhaus, Ziggy Stardust. It's one of my favorite covers of all time. It is such a jam. Yeah. Good old Peter Murphy.
Bauhaus,
man. You gotta love those guys.
They're great.
You've seen The Hunger, right?
Mm-hmm.
You gotta love the Bela Lugosi's dad opens up that movie. It's pretty classic. All right, let's take another break here. When we come back, we got more covers to talk about. Great music covers. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Hear me when I say softly. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Skyline Studio here until 5 a.m. every weekday morning. I'm your overnight dude, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich follows with the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6 with your morning drive right here on 720 WGN. We are talking about great cover versions of songs. There have been so many, and we're going through a bunch of them and listening to some of them and talking about them, too. What are your favorites? 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. All right. Let's see. Here's David on WGN. Hi, David.
Hello. Great show. Great show. Appreciate all this info that I'm getting about a lot of good music. One of my faves is Nina Simone covered Here Comes the Sun.
Yes.
An amazing piece of music, if you ask me.
I agree.
She's an amazing artist.
I agree. I totally agree. Yeah, great version of it. Really great.
Great. Yeah. Thank you, Nick.
All right, David. Have a good one.
You too. Thanks.
Smashing Pumpkins, Landslide. I've often said about that song, about Landslide. It's so good that even Billy Corgan can't ruin it. That's how good Landslide is. It's such a great song that even Billy Corgan can't ruin it. I like exactly one song by the Smashing Pumpkins.
Which one?
1979.
Okay.
That's the only one I like.
That's a shame. That's a bit of a shame.
Who is Hot Chip?
Hot Chip is kind of they're in the same vein as someone like New Order. So they're kind of like a dance pop.
And they covered Dancing in the Dark.
Oh, it's so good.
By Bruce Springsteen.
It's amazing.
That's hilarious. Who's going to cover that song?
These guys. And they pull it off spectacularly.
Hot Chip.
It's amazing. And the real kicker is for fans is that at the end of it, they go into another cover. They use the they're using the same key and everything, going to a cover of a song by a band called LCD Sound System.
Uh-huh.
But here's a little bit of Dancing in the Dark.
Great. This is really great. Really great.
Yeah,
that's really, really great.
It's a lot of fun, and it's a 7 minute cover.
Yeah,
it's really good.
Hot Chip. Never heard of the band before, but I gotta say I like that. I thought that was pretty great. One of my favorite songs of the 70s is the Brothers Johnson, Strawberry Letter 23. Shuggie Otis was the original artist, but the Brothers Johnson version I love, from 1977. Placebo covered Running Up That Hill, the Kate Bush song, which I've heard. Nina Simone does another cover, as we were talking about Nina Simone just a couple of minutes ago. I Put a Spell on You by Screamin' Jay Hawkins. White Stripes, I Just Don't Know What to Do with Myself.
Oh, I didn't know that was a cover.
It's a cover it was released in 1962 by Tommy Hunt.
That makes sense. They do a lot of blues covers.
Yep. Yes, they do.
Sir M.O.,
Susie and the Banshees, Dear Prudence, fantastic.
And I'll throw in Susie and the Banshees, The Passenger.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Iggy Pop.
Yeah. This Mortal Coil, Song to the Siren. It's a cover of a Tim Buckley song. The Kingsman, Louie Louie. A lot of people didn't realize that that's a cover.
I didn't even know that was a cover.
Richard Berry did the original version in 1957. Yeah, Louie Louie.
One of the most dangerous songs in rock and roll, if you ask parents of the 1950s.
Yeah, well, they didn't understand what anybody was saying. Here's Chris on WGN. Hi, Chris.
Hey, Nick. How's it going?
All right.
Like I was talking with Tom, you already covered the Disturbed cover, Sound of Silence. But have you ever heard Molly Hatchet do Freebird?
I have not heard Molly Hatchet do Freebird.
It's off of Double Live.
Oh.
And of course, Heart doing rock and roll is a great one.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, those are good.
But yeah, check out Molly Hatchet. They do a pretty good cover.
Okay. All right, Chris, thanks.
Have a great night, man.
That seems appropriate that Molly Hatchet would cover Freebird.
Yes, from one Southern rock band
right.
to the other.
Right.
Paying homage.
Right.
Let's see, I've got a little bit of it here.
All right. Sounds very faithful.
Yeah. I like the piano, though. That's a nice touch.
Yeah. Yep. It makes sense that Molly Hatchet would do that.
Mm-hmm. I want maybe someone else to try it, though. Do a little Freebird.
Yeah.
Someone out of the genre. That'd be cool.
Well, I always say that, you know, because you know those idiots who go to concerts and scream out Freebird?
Yeah.
Which is not funny, and we can blame Kevin Matthews for that, even though I love Kev, and I'm a Kev head. But he started all that crap. People get drunk, they start screaming Freebird. I've always said that every band on the planet should know a really, really kick-ass 18-minute version of Freebird. And then when some idiot screams Freebird at the concert, they just play it and then say, shut the F up afterwards.
It's done.
I've always said, you just have it in your hip pocket. You know what I mean? Just have it. Just have a killer 18-minute version of Freebird. Just have it at the ready. Some drunk yells Freebird, boom.
Just melt their face.
And then just tell them to shut up. By the way, I love Freebird. Unabashedly, I love that song.
Great song.
And I don't get sick of it. It's one of those, you know how there's a lot of classic rock songs that are on the FM dial and have been on the FM dial every 5 minutes for 40 years and you get sick of them? Those classic, Freebird is not one of them for me. Freebird starts, I'm happy. It's not like, oh, God, I can't hear this song again. Stairway, same thing. I could hear Stairway 50 times. It doesn't bother me. Now, like, Baba O'Reilly, I could live a full life if I never heard that song ever again.
It's true.
I mean,
it's very true.
Now, it's not like it wasn't a great song.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Because it was. I can't listen to it. Every time it starts, I'm like, oh, no.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some classic rock songs that you just can't. I can't listen to them. But Freebird's not one of them, man. I love Freebird.
Because it just shreds.
It's so fantastic. And the live version on One from the Road is fantastic. All right, let's see. More cover versions of songs here. The Byrds, Mr. Tambourine Man, that's, you know, it were originally released by Bob Dylan, but the Byrds, I mean, they made it their own. You really can't think of anybody else doing that. So I know it's a Dylan song, and I know that Dylan did the original. But the Byrds version of it is quintessential. It's iconic. It's so closely identified with that band, too. The Slits did a cover of I Heard It Through the Grapevine.
Oh, wow. Probably faster than it's ever been played.
I would imagine so. Charles Bradley's Changes, which we mentioned earlier. Iron and Wine, Such Great Heights. Sonic Youth Superstar. Sonic Youth does a lot of really great stuff. Let's see. Texts just have come in. Nick, 7738, this is Carl in Jefferson Park, says Nirvana's cover of David Bowie's The Man Who Sold the World. Well, I mean, that's pretty much legendary. How much did his cardigan go for?
Oh, man.
Like $425,000 or something?
The most expensive cardigan ever bought. Outside of a Macy's.
Manfred Mann, Blinded by the Light.
Yeah.
And For You, Saxon, Ride Like the Wind. Saxon did a cover of Ride Like the Wind? Ride Like the Wind by Christopher Cross? That is hilarious. Saxon is, by the way, a metal band, for those people who might not be familiar. A metal band like Saxon covering Christopher Cross.
That's a real yeah man song.
Man. That's hilarious.
That's incredible. That's an amazing cover.
That's, oh my God. How about Ugly Kid Joe, Cats in the Cradle? I remember that. Roxy Music's cover of Neil Young's Hurricane. That's pretty great. Rush did a cover of Crossroads by Cream. Incredible cover. Crossroads is a cover by Cream.
Yeah. So I'm the dude playing the dude disguised as another dude.
That's right. Here's Roger from Manitoba. Hey, Roger.
Hey, Nick. How you doing?
All right. What's up?
Okay. I'd be remiss as a Canadian not to bring up Triumph doing Rocky Mountain Way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Even Joe Walsh said they nailed it better than he did.
Yeah. Oh.
That was an amazing version.
Triumph. Absolutely.
Right on.
Okay,
Canadian
thanks.
Stuff, buddy.
All right, Roger. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Triumph, man. All right, let's take a break here, and we will come back and talk a little bit more about cover versions of songs and more right here on 720 WGN. The only thing I remember about this video is there's a weird little kid in it. That's the only thing I remember. Hey! It's a weird little kid.
Yeah, I'm not really sure what that is.
You never heard that before?
I've never heard Art of Noise, no.
Close to the Edit?
No, never heard it.
Wow. Okay.
There you go.
I just didn't think Art of Noise had more than one hit. I don't know how we're going to get a twofer out of him. No. Art of Noise did have a couple more hits.
Mm.
But yeah, the video is ridiculous. They're like taking chainsaws to pianos and stuff, and there's a weird little girl. It's nuts. That was a very popular song in the early 80s.
Yeah, I was going to say, that sounds pretty 80s.
Oh, it's very 80s.
Very 80s.
Yeah. Who requested that?
That's coming to us from Steve.
Steve wanted to hear a little Art of Noise. All right. We are talking about cover versions of songs. Pavement did Killing Moon. They covered Killing Moon? Pavement did? Wow. By Echo and the Bunnymen.
They do a good job of it, too.
Okay.
It's a good one.
Let's see. Cat Power covered I Found a Reason by the Velvet Underground. Chance the Rapper and the Social Experiment covered Wonderful Every Day by Bob Marley. Tom Waits covered Somewhere from West Side Story, which I've heard and it's awesome. Faith No More is mentioned here with Easy. The surprising thing about that is just how sort of like beautiful and like faithful it is to the original Commodore's version. Because you would expect it, Faith No More, you know. But, yeah, and their cover of War Pigs is phenomenal, as I mentioned. Here's Andrew on WGN. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, how you doing?
All right.
One of the strangest covers I've heard was Dion of Dion the Belmonts doing Jimi Hendrix's Purple Haze.
Oh, no, really?
Yes, it's way, way out there.
Yeah, I can imagine. Maybe we'll find that one. Dion covering Purple Haze.
Yeah, you know, I googled it. It's definitely there.
Okay.
But yeah.
Okay.
It's, oh yeah. Okay.
All right. Thanks, Andrew. Take care. Did you find Dion covering Purple Haze?
I think so. Is it D-I-O-N?
Yeah.
So I believe that, and correct me if I'm wrong.
Purple headlights coming around. Don't know whether if now I'm coming up down. Somebody, am I happy? Whatever it is, she put a spell on me.
Wow. Wow.
I gotta give him points for the flute.
I don't even know what to say.
Sounds just like it. Whew. Sounds just like the original.
Frank Ocean covered Moon River from Breakfast at Tiffany's. Earth, Wind, and Fire covered Gotta Get You Into My Life. Yeah, by the Beatles, obviously. Otis Redding, Try a Little Tenderness. I didn't even realize that that was a cover. Ray Noble and his orchestra did it in 1932. I'm sure it doesn't sound anything like Otis's. That would be my guess. Nirvana and the Man Who Sold the World, David Bowie, we mentioned that one already. Isaac Hayes, fantastic cover of Walk On by Dionne Warwick. Fantastic.
Is that with the, are the Barcays on that?
I do not know. But it's a great version.
It's an, yeah.
All right. Oh, you got to love this. Dinosaur Jr., Just Like Heaven by The Cure.
Super noisy. Super fun.
I love those guys. Jay Maskus rules. Bjork, It's Oh So Quiet. That was released by Horst Harry Winter in 1948. Spoon covering Don't You Eva.
That's a cover?
The Natural History recorded it 3 years earlier.
Oh, that's interesting. Huh.
How about the Dead Kennedys' Viva Las Vegas?
Love it.
It's great. It's great. The English Beat, Tears of a Clown, Smokey Robinson and the Miracles. R.E.M. Superman. That's a cover? It was recorded by The Click in 1969. I had no idea that that was a cover. Wow. Led Zeppelin, When the Levee Breaks. Well, Zeppelin had a tendency to cover a lot of songs and then take credit for writing them.
Yeah, they've only just now started, over the last few remasters that they've done over, like, you know, 20-something years, they started putting the credit in there, paying the royalties.
And they're starting to, they had to pay some of these guys' families.
Yeah.
You know, every song that they wrote, that they said they wrote, says Page and Plant. Was it like the Lemon song? They did not write the Lemon song.
No. Dazed and Confused?
No.
No. A lot of them they reworked. Or
yeah, like When
finished.
The Levee Break is one of them.
Yeah, they reworked it.
But
you still gotta pay them.
You have to, man.
You gotta pay the original.
Listen, artist. I love Led Zeppelin as much as the next
sure.
guy, but they're legendary thieves.
That's what they do.
No, exactly. Do. And, you know, but, I mean, I love them. I'm not gonna lie. I love Led Zeppelin.
I want to say Led Zeppelin 3 was probably their first album of mostly original material. I can't think of anything on there that's really a cover.
Yeah, because 1 and 2 are loaded with
full of covers.
Are full of like ripoffs and covers.
Because Babe, I'm Gonna Leave You.
Please, it's kind of absurd actually when you think about it.
They got sued for Stairway.
Yep.
So there's just I love the long history of Led Zeppelin lawsuits.
Yeah. But they're still awesome.
Yeah, doesn't make them bad. No. Just means that you got to take them to the bank and make sure they cut you a check.
Yep. Have we got weather coming? No Doubt covered It's My Life by Talk Talk.
Very good cover.
I like the original 9,000 times better.
I mean, yeah. It's Talk Talk.
I love Talk Talk. Temptations, Papa Was a Rolling Stone. A lot of people don't know that that was a cover. The Undisputed Truth did it earlier that year. That was at a time when everybody was covering stuff 6 months later or a year later, and there's like four or five different versions of the same song. Like, for instance, this next one, Aretha Franklin's Respect, recorded a year and a half earlier by Otis Redding.
Well, it's a little bit more of a jazz mentality, because like in jazz, you're constantly referencing and covering other people's songs just within other songs. You'll just hop into a standard or something.
Right. Both versions are great, though. Otis's version is great. It's great. And then, of course, Aretha made it hers. Patti Smith covered Gloria in 1975. The Clash, I Fought the Law, one of my favorite covers of all time. Beatles, Twist and Shout, that's a cover by the Top Notes originally. Cake, I Will Survive, love it. I love Cake's version of I Will Survive. Here's another version I love. Here's another cover I absolutely love is Devo's I Can't Get No Satisfaction. Devo's version of I Can't Get No Satisfaction by the Stones. Great. Let's see. John Coltrane, My Favorite Things from The Sound of Music. Wait a minute. Ryan Adams covered Wonderwall?
Yeah.
What?
I think it was from his album People, Hell, and Angels.
Says it was 2003 he covered it. That's Oasis's Wonderwall. I've never heard it before. The Sundays covered Wild Horses. So, all right. We got a few more covers that we're going to get to here. And if you want to jump in, we're going to wrap this up here. And then after four, we are going to talk about, on this date in 1975, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest opened in theaters. And so we're going to talk about movies that are actually better than the books that they're based on. So that's going to be coming up. All right, welcome back. God, I haven't heard that in years. Art of Noise. Ooh, it's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Skyline studio here till 5 a.m. every weekday morning. I'm here till 5. Steve Grzanich follows this show at 5 with the opening bell. Steve Cochran at 6 with your morning drive. Also, the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN. All right, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're wrapping up this topic here. We've been talking about great cover versions of songs and some surprising ones, too. Michael Andrews featuring Gary Jules, they covered Mad World, the Tears for Fears song.
Yeah, it's the one from the Donnie Darko.
Yeah, Donnie Darko. Blondie, Hanging on the Telephone. See, I didn't know that was a cover. By The Nerves. And their version came out 2 years before Blondie's. Didn't even realize that that was a cover. Here's another one I didn't realize that was a cover. Elvis Costello and the Attractions, What's So Funny About Peace, Love, and Understanding? Brinsley Schwartz was the original artist. Nick Lowe wrote it, but Elvis Costello, that's such a great song. Watchtower by Jimi Hendrix. So, let's see. 630 area code says, Pearl Jam version of Last Kiss. Also, can you think of a Bob Dylan song where the cover wasn't better than Dylan's version? I can't. Oh, come on now.
That's not true.
It's not true at all. 708 area code, Don't Be Cruel by Cheap Trick. Yeah, that's a great cover. Also, they've done a bunch of great covers. They did a bunch of Beatles. Well, they toured and played all of Sgt. Pepper from front to back, the whole thing. 331 area code says, anything by Me First and the Gimme Gimmies. We used to have their CDs on the jukebox at Simon's.
I think that's a really fun idea for a band. Just get a bunch of guys in punk bands all together playing covers.
Mm-hmm. Soft Cell, by, Tainted Love by Soft Cell is way up high on this list. They Might Be Giants, Istanbul, Not Constantinople.
Wait, that's a cover?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
The Four Lads recorded it in 1953.
It's a classic.
Yep. Sinead O'Connor, Nothing Compares to You, which was originally by a group called The Family. Prince wrote it for them.
Mm.
They released one album. Of course, I bought it because anything that was associated with Prince in the 80s, I bought. Anything. Their version is a lot different than Sinead O'Connor's version of it. The Family, they had, Wendy Melvoin of Wendy and Lisa fame. She's got a twin sister named Susanna, and she was in that band. She was in The Family. Back when I knew John Cusack, because I hung out with John Cusack for a while, him and Jeremy Piven, they lived together. He was dating Susanna Melvoin. That's back when I knew him. That's a long time ago. The Marvin Gaye, I Heard It Through the Grapevine.
So good.
Gladys Knight and the Pips cover it's a cover. Talking Heads, Take Me to the River, which we mentioned earlier. Johnny Cash, Hurt. And then on this list, they rank the number one cover of as Jeff Buckley's Hallelujah, which I think a lot of people would agree with that. So, but yeah, and the Johnny Cash version of Hurt is just amazing. And his those last two albums that Johnny Cash released, those American the American, what was it called?
The American recordings. I think. I want to say there were six in total. Six total albums.
Rick Rubin, he worked with Rick Rubin on.
Yeah. I think two of them were released posthumously,
mm-hmm.
With a few of them being released during the final years of his life.
Yeah. But, Hurt is just, it's absolutely incredible.
Yeah. He does a cover of In My Life by the Beatles as well. That's really just a knockout.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah. He was something, Johnny Cash. You know?
What a life.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. You know, there's this show called Top 10 Revealed on Access TV. It's on every Sunday night. It's like a half an hour long, and they just do a countdown, and they have talking heads like VH1. And the subject was Country Outlaws. And, of course, Merle Haggard was number one.
I'm guessing David Allan Coe was on there.
David Allan Coe was on there. Johnny Cash. All of the
all the outlaw country guys.
Yeah, but all the guys in the Highwaymen, all of those guys.
Yeah.
All those guys were in there. I was a little bit surprised that they didn't include Steve Earle. But Steve Earle, I know balances that line between country and rock.
Yeah.
But he's been to jail. He was hooked on heroin. I mean, he did some terrible stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the prerequisites was you had to at least spend a little time in prison.
You got to go to the Who Scout.
And he was in the Who Scout. Steve Earle served time, man.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he writes about it a lot. He wrote about a lot of that stuff. And I guess he's not, I don't think he's country enough. That's the thing with Steve Earle. The country people don't like him because he's too rock, and the rock people don't like him because they think he's too country.
And they're both idiots.
Completely.
Amazing.
He's unbelievable. He's unbelievable. Also a really cool dude. So, all right, let's break here for the news, and then when we come back, we're going to talk about One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, which opened on this date in 1975, and then books that are better than the movies that are better than the books. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday. One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200. Who requested that?
It's coming to us from Mike in Old Irving Park, a little George Benson.
Right. All right. Welcome back, everyone. And we're here until 5. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, Steve Cochran at 6. So on this, we're going to talk about movies that were much better than the books that they were based on. And the reason why we're going to talk about that is because on this date in 1975, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest opened in theaters. One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, a film about a group of patients at a mental institution, opened in theaters on this date, directed by Milos Forman, based on a 1962 novel of the same name by Ken Kesey. The film star Jack Nicholson was co-produced by the actor Michael Douglas. One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest went on to become the first film in four decades to win all five of the major Academy Award categories, including Best Actor for Jack Nicholson, Best Actress Louise Fletcher, Best Director, Best Screenplay Adapted, and Best Picture. One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest marked Jack Nicholson's first Oscar win, although the actor, who was born on April 22, 1937 in Neptune, New Jersey, had already received four other Academy Award nominations by that time. Nicholson's first nomination in the Best Supporting Actor category came for his performance as an alcoholic lawyer in 1969's Easy Rider, co-starring with Dennis Hopper and Peter Fonda. He earned his next Oscar nomination for Best Actor in 1970 for Five Easy Pieces, in which he played a drifter. For 1973's The Last Detail, Nicholson earned another Best Actor Oscar nomination. His fourth Best Actor Oscar nomination came for his performance as Detective Jake Gittes in the and directed Roman Polanski's Chinatown from 1974. In One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, Nicholson played Randall McMurphy, a convict who pretends to be crazy so that he can be sent to a mental institution and avoid prison work detail. Once at the asylum, McMurphy encounters a varied cast of inmates and clashes memorably with the authoritative Nurse Ratched. During the 1980s, Nicholson was known for his charisma and his devilish grin, appearing in such films as Stanley Kubrick's The Shining, which was based on Stephen King's horror novel, The Postman Always Rings Twice with Jessica Lange, Reds, which was directed by Warren Beatty and earned Nicholson another Best Supporting Actor Oscar nomination, Terms of Endearment, for which he collected a second Best Actor Oscar, Preetzi's Honor, for which he received another Best Actor Oscar nomination, Witches of Eastwick with Cher, Susan Sarandon, and Michelle Pfeiffer, Ironweed, for which he took home yet another Best Actor Academy Award nomination, and Batman, in which he played the villainous Joker. Nicholson's prolific work in the 1990s included The Two Jakes, a sequel to Chinatown directed by Nicholson himself, the biopic Hoffa, and A Few Good Men, for which he earned another Best Supporting Actor Oscar nomination. A Few Good Men features Tom Cruise and Demi Moore and includes the now-famous Nicholson line, "You can't handle the truth." Nicholson won his third Best Actor Oscar in 1997 for As Good As It Gets, which co-starred Helen Hunt. And he earned his 12th Academy Award nomination for his performance in About Schmidt. I guess I forgot how many times he's been nominated, and it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, he's one of the most decorated actors out there.
Man, God, he was good in As Good As It Gets.
Mm-hmm.
I love that movie. I love that movie.
Was did you mention if he was nominated for five Easy Pieces?
He was.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I love Five Easy Pieces.
Yeah, me too. Me too. He's also fantastic in Terms of Endearment.
Mm-hmm.
And that supporting role, he's fantastic.
That's a movie that's better than the book.
I've not read the book.
Mm. So it's okay.
Yeah, I haven't read the book. But yeah, some of the stuff that they mentioned here, the only one that I actively dislike, and he got an Oscar nomination for it, was Ironweed. I do not like that movie. And I thought he and Meryl Streep were both really hamming it up. You know? So. All right, let's see. Here's Frank on WGN. Hi, Frank.
Hey, good morning, Nick.
Morning.
I'm probably going to have to go to church every Sunday for the next month for saying this, but my pick would be the Ten Commandments.
Oh, so it's better than the Bible.
That's right.
Depends on which version it is. Are we talking about King James or what? I don't know.
King John Williams, yeah. From the 1 o'clock show.
Got it. All right, Frank, thanks.
Thanks.
Take care.
I mean, you have to admit, it's a riveting movie.
The Ten Commandments?
Yeah. I like The Ten Commandments.
Yeah, it's long, man. I mean, it's really long. I used to watch it when I was a kid every Easter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they would show it every Easter. And so, you know, the whole parting of the Red Sea, all that stuff I thought was really cool. You know, Charlton Heston turning old.
Yeah.
You know? But, you know, as I've gone back, it's a really corny movie.
Sure.
And it's really long. It's
super long.
So.
Well, you just do a double feature with that and Ben-Hur, and there's your entire day.
There's 9 hours killed right there. You know what they used to do back in the day, you know, when, like, before cable? It would be a two-night event. Because Ten Commandments is so long that ABC could not do it as a movie of the week to fill the time slot. They had to do it in two nights.
I think they still did that when I was a kid. They would still do that from time to time for the Ten Commandments. Two nights.
Yeah. Here's Ike on WGN. Go ahead, Ike.
Hey, Nick. How's it going with you, man?
Good.
Okay, I have to say this because this is a movie I watch every Thanksgiving, not because it's on Thanksgiving, but there are some themes in it. Because it's in the winter, and there's a dinner scene, and it's about a stranger entering someone else's territory, and I have to say Misery.
You liked it better than the book.
Well, but I will say there are scenes in the book they should have put in the movie, like when she chops his foot off and she runs over the sheriff with the lawnmower.
Yeah.
They should have put that in.
Yeah. All right. See you, Ike.
No problem.
All right. I have not read Misery. You read Misery?
Yeah, it's definitely one of the better Stephen King books. I've read a lot of Stephen King for someone who doesn't always jive with Stephen King.
I've read a lot of Stephen King, too. For some reason, I haven't read Misery.
Yeah, I think it's one of the better ones. And it's about his whole paranoia of his own fans.
Yeah. I like the movie. But the movie was good. All right, let's take a break here. We got some weather here. And then we'll come back and we'll talk about movies that are way better than the books that they're based on. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Here's your forecast from the WGN Chicago Weather Center. For today, patchy light rain may be ongoing during the morning commute, but we will probably range in the mid-30s in the morning. The temperatures will peak around 40. Clouds will persist overnight, keeping lows just above freezing in most areas. For tomorrow, clouds will break. We'll see some sunshine. The temperatures will climb to seasonable levels for the first time this month, and we'll see some rain and drizzle late. Low pressure moves across the upper Midwest, bringing showers and some mild air. Temperatures well into the 50s. For Friday, any lingering clouds exit the area around daybreak, leaving skies sunny. Much cooler, though. Afternoon temperatures will struggle to reach highs near 40. Frosty start to the day on Saturday. Early morning sun fades due to high mid-level clouds. And it'll be seasonably cold overnight. It's currently 35 at O'Hare, it's 36 at Midway, and it's 36 at the lakefront. All right, let's take a quick break. We come back. Movies that are better than the books. That's what we're talking about right here on WGN. I'm trying to show how much I love you. Still believing in romance. You're taking way too many chances. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGiulio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Skyline Studio here until 5 a.m. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text, and your Two for Tuesday request. Yeah! 312-981-7200. All right. Movies that are better than the book. Your first thing that popped into my head, Tom, the very first one is American Psycho. I hated that book. I hated it with every fiber of my being. I hated it. And, you know, I wasn't looking forward to the movie, but it's great. The movie's great. And they turned it into a black comedy. You know, it took a woman director and a woman screenwriter to fix what Bret Easton Ellis wrote. And make it a black comedy and make it entertaining. And it's one of Christian Bale's best performances. And that's the very first one that pops into my head because it's so much better than the book. So, Here's what they say. Brokeback Mountain. Let's see. There's no shortage of literary awards for Annie Proulx's short story, Brokeback Mountain, when it originally ran in The New Yorker in 1997. Her tale of two Wyoming cowboys who form an intense emotional and sexual connection, working alongside each other as sheep herders, won a National Magazine Award for Fiction and was third in the O. Henry Awards. The praise is well-deserved, but Ang Lee's 2005 adaptation, for which he won the Best Director Oscar, breathes life into the words with gorgeous cinematography, an Academy Award-winning score from Gustavo Santaolalla, and heartbreaking performances by Jake Gyllenhaal and the late Heath Ledger. Mm. Yeah, I've not read the book. No Country for Old Men. Cormac McCarthy's writing isn't for everyone, especially readers who enjoy things like an adherence to grammatical norms. But there was a riveting dark story buried in the punctuation-free prose of No Country for Old Men, and Joel and Ethan Coen found it in their 2007 adaptation. With stunning performances by Javier Bardem as a conscious free hitman on the run and Tommy Lee Jones as the small-town Texas sheriff chasing him, the flick cleaned up during awards season with Oscars for Best Picture, Director, Screenplay, Supporting Actor for Bardem. Heads or tails, the Coen brothers nailed it. I did not read No Country for Old Men.
Yeah, I read it. I read it at the tail end of last year, and I really, really enjoyed it. But I don't think it really bears comparison at certain points.
Yeah,
because it's just Cormac McCarthy is a very specific type of writer,
right?
And like they mentioned, he just punctuation just doesn't exist to him.
Yeah,
so it's a very spare story, but it's really disturbing.
I wouldn't read it because I didn't like the movie, so. I can't stand the movie. This is true. Jaws. They made so many improvements to what was in the book. Before the days of CGI, Steven Spielberg proved that showing less is often a lot more terrifying than his 1975 adaptation of Peter Benchley's novel about a small-town police chief played by Roy Scheider who teams up with a modern-day Ahab, Robert Shaw, to rid the town of a killer shark. The novel had some interesting things to say about class, but an awful lot of time wasted on an implausible affair between the chief's wife and a marine biologist. And, of course, the page could never compete with John Williams' score, which strikes fear in the heart of beachgoers 45 years later. Yeah, the whole subplot about Hooper sleeping with Brody's wife, it's just absurd.
It's weird, and it adds nothing. It's, you know, I'm glad they took it out. I'm glad they let him live.
Yeah. Yeah, so no, but yes, Jaws is a movie is much better than the book. Here's Mike on WGN. Hi, Mike.
Good morning, Nick. How are you doing?
All right.
Die Hard, the movie, is much better than Roderick Thorpe's novel, which I picked up after I had seen the movie, but it still doesn't compare.
And it's called what?
I forget the title.
22 minutes or something like that? Or
22 floors or something like that. Yeah.
Something
about the building itself. Yeah. And the detective is the father of the female protagonist.
Oh, the father? You
know, And just the characterizations just seem to be. I mean, you can't beat Alan Rickman.
He's great. He's phenomenal. And again, every time we mention this, I can't believe that was his first movie.
His first American movie, actually.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
All right. And both versions of The Thing are better than Who Goes There.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I did go back and read Who Goes There after I saw Carpenter's movie, and it was not as good as Carpenter.
No, it's like, you know, 1940s sci-fi, and it's just very stilted and uneven. Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
All right, take care, buddy.
Have a good one.
I will say the Roderick Thorpe novel is Nothing Lasts Forever. That's what Die Hard is based on.
Nothing Lasts Forever?
Yep. It's called Nothing Lasts Forever.
Oh.
And for the Who Goes There, apparently, fairly recently, they found out that Campbell, I can't remember who the author was.
Yeah.
But they went through some of his old writings, and they found out that it was supposed to be a much larger novel, and it was recently published as such.
Oh.
And it's called, like, Frozen Hell.
Oh.
And so there's an expanded version of Who Goes There as a novel.
I'd be interested to check that out. Here's John on WGN. Hi, John.
Hi. One film I really found kind of interesting, this is back late 80s and early 90s, was Ragtime.
Ragtime?
Yeah, Ragtime. It's based on the novel by E.L. Doctorow.
Right.
And it featured Manny Patinkin and, the famous gangster, James Cagney.
Yeah, James Cagney was his last movie. It was Jimmy Cagney's last movie.
Yeah. And it was really interesting because I remember watching it in a theater and then seeing it when it was released in television version, and it just looked different. And I realized afterward that it was filmed in Todd Ayo.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about a throwback, you know, to 70mm.
Right.
But it was really nice, and I loved the music, and I thought it kind of brought the novel really alive.
Yeah, and Milos Forman directed it. We mentioned him earlier about One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. Milos Forman directed it. Okay, thanks, John.
Thank you.
Okay.
Take care.
I did not read Ragtime.
Ragtime's good.
And I haven't seen the movie in a long time, but I remember really liking it, like a lot. All right, let's take a break here, and then we'll come back and talk more about movies that are better than the books that they're based on. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We would love to hear from you right here on WGN. Well, welcome back, everybody. Yeah. And we're back. We're live in the Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. And it is a Tuesday morning. We're listening to some Two for Tuesday. You made Two for Tuesday. Who requested that?
It's coming to us from Lake Geneva, Dan. A couple covers here from Jimi Hendrix. That one, Blue Suede Shoes.
There you go. Because we were talking about cover songs a little bit earlier in the show. Right now, though, we are talking about movies that are better than the books that they're based on. And the article that I have in front of me, they mention American Psycho as well they should. Though director Mary Harron's 2000 adaptation remains mostly faithful to the tome, she was able to mine the dark humor, the gore becoming more social commentary than just sociopathic. And yeah, Christian Bale hacking Jared Leto with an axe while critiquing Huey Lewis in the news is always a win.
I first saw that when I was really not a fan of Jared Leto, so it was really satisfying.
Yeah. What changed you?
I'm going to say probably, I'm trying to think.
Requiem?
Yeah, once I saw Requiem for a Dream, I was like, oh, he's actually a really good actor. But at that point, I only knew him as the leader of 30 Seconds to Mars, which is a terrible, terrible band.
Well, here's the thing, man. He's Jordan Catalano.
Before my time, though. I don't know what to tell you.
He gets a lifetime pass because he's Jordan Catalano.
Well, to me, I was like, oh, look, it's the guy from 30 Seconds to Mars. Oh, look, he's here getting hacked to death by Christian Bale. And here he is getting his face beaten in by Ed Norton in Fight Club,
yeah,
Angel Face. And I'm like, God, I love watching that. Because I really just had a vendetta against him.
Wow.
And then saw Requiem for a Dream. I was like, oh, wow, he's got substance.
Mm-hmm.
And his career from that point on has been a series of hits and misses.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
He's done some really remarkably bad performances, but some remarkably great ones, too.
Yeah, I would agree with that. But you know, I thought American Psycho was really funny, and the book, I threw the book across the room.
See,
while I was reading it, I was like, man, get this away from me. I hated it.
I think the monologue at the beginning where he's talking about doing his skin routine is so funny, mm-hmm. but also very unsettling.
We got some texts coming in about movies that are much better than the books that they're based on. And that happens every once in a while. 630 area, because if the movie Fletch is way better than the book, it's like comparing a picture in color or black and white. The character Fletch in the book was really straight-laced. Chevy Chase gave Fletch style and pizzazz. Did not read the book, but the movie's great. the movie. I love Fletch.
Now, what about Fletch Lives?
Not good. Couple of funny scenes in it. There are a couple of funny scenes in Fletch Lives. But the first one's great. Carol says the movie The Best Exotic Marigold Hotel was much better than the book These Foolish Things. The book was gross. Oh, this is a good one. 630 area code for Nick D. Bridges of Madison County. Movie is better than the book. The book was terrible. The movie was great.
I've never actually seen or read Bridges of Madison County.
Don't read it. See the movie.
Okay.
Movie's great. Clint Eastwood knocked it out of the park, and he and Meryl Streep are both phenomenal in it. It's a great movie, like heartbreaking and beautiful, and everything that the book wasn't, it is.
Because I've been to the Bridges of Madison County.
Yeah. No, it's really seriously. That's right up there with American Psycho in terms of improving what was essentially an awful book and making it a really, really great movie. Mm-hmm. Mean Girls. Well, Mean Girls wasn't really a narrative.
Yeah, it was more of a...
Yeah, it was Mean Girls. And it was Queen Bees and Wannabes. Right. And it was, you know, and then, but Tina Fey wrote it into a screenplay. But it wasn't, I don't know if that's fair, because it's not, I mean, you have to say that it's based, because it was. But it was just, the text was full of anecdotes from Rosalind Wiseman's time leading high school empowerment workshops. Faye spun the scraps into a hysterical, sometimes heartbreaking yarn about a new girl, Lindsay Lohan in her prime, navigating the minefield of girl world in high school. The whole thing is still totally Fetch. Stop trying to make Fetch a thing.
Can we say it's a great adaptation of New Trier?
I love Mean Girls. I love that movie.
Oh, it's incredibly funny.
Yeah, it's great. And, man, that was back when I thought Lindsay Lohan was going to be, like, the biggest thing in the world. She was so great. I mean, the whole cast is great in that movie.
I still can't believe that... Rachel McAdams was like 30 making that movie. She looks like a high school student.
Yeah.
Like, I was shocked.
I like Rachel McAdams.
She's great. She's great. Yeah. Especially in that.
And Lacey from Party of Five. Hilarious. Hilarious in it. Blade Runner.
That's true.
Yeah, it is true. It's based on the novel Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? And it is better than the book.
Pretty sure even Philip K. Dick, I don't know if he said it was better, but I think they showed it to him and he said, how did you manage to get what was in my head onto a screen?
You know what's amazing about it is, what's amazing about Philip K. Dick adaptations is that they're most of them are really good, but they're not like the books at all.
No.
Except for Scanner Darkly. That's the only one that captures Philip K. Dick's voice and style, because Blade Runner is completely different. Starship Troopers. No, wait, that's Harlan Ellison, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. What was
Heinlein. Or is it
Heinlein?
Heinlein.
Yeah, Heinlein.
You're thinking of like Minority Report.
Yeah, Minority Report. It was Total Recall based on a Philip K.
Total Recall. Yeah, that was a short story.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he was really a troubled guy.
Yes.
Especially when he got into, like, the psychotic drugs and everything like that, which is what Scanner Darkly is really all about.
Yeah.
But I can't believe that Linklater was able to make that into a movie.
You know, and it's a beautiful movie. That last scene is heartbreaking. And that rotoscope stuff that he did that I didn't think worked at all in Waking Life.
It was interesting in Waking Life, and then he finally perfected it.
It was completely appropriate and perfect for Scanner Darkly.
Robert Downey Jr. giving and Woody Harrelson giving insano performances.
Yeah.
Insano.
Yeah. And Keanu, fantastic in it.
Yeah.
Winona Ryder, really good in it. That's a great movie, and not as many people have seen that movie as they should. Unusual movie, though. I mean, I will warn people ahead of time, it's a very strange film.
Yeah, if you've ever taken acid, be prepared for some flashbacks. Wow.
They say All About Eve is better than what was written in Cosmopolitan magazine, the story that was written in Cosmopolitan magazine. Fasten your seatbelt, it's going to be a bumpy night. That's one of those lines that those classic movie lines that people get wrong.
Because they say it's a ride, not
yep.
night.
Yep. There was an article that was written about movie lines that people get wrong all the time, and they were being very specific and nitpicky. I remember reading the article and going, "Oh, come on!" Like for instance, the line in Jaws is, "You're going to need a bigger boat," but everybody says, "We're going to need a bigger boat." Yeah. So,
or Luke, I'm your father versus no, I'm your father.
Yeah. Yes, another mention of L.A. Confidential for this morning. The neo-noir crime thriller about crooked and straight Cali cops in the 1950s was a huge commercial and critical success when it hit theaters in 97. But the film found no bigger fan than author James Ellroy, who claimed director Curtis Hanson did an excellent job compressing the story while maintaining the overall dramatic thrust. Says Ellroy, the book is black type on white paper and the film is visual. It's a completely compatible visual form of the novel. The Godfather, this is true. This is true. The movie is much better than the book.
The book is really trashy.
It is, and it took me forever to get through.
Well, especially the stuff with the girl that Sonny sleeps with at the beginning.
Yeah.
And then they send her off to what, like Vegas? To get, you know, reconstructive surgery. It's all this weird stuff.
The book is, I mean, the movie is so much better than the book. I mean, he made vast improvements on the book. Election. I didn't even know that was based on a book. Reese Witherspoon's performance as an overachieving, win-at-all-cost high school student. Tracy Flick.
Pick Flick.
Oh, man. In Tom Parada's 1998 novel, she was more a sexual manipulator than go-getter, who admits that it was a good change that Alexander Payne did. That was just one of several switches director Alexander Payne made that elevated the novel about a disgruntled teacher played by Matthew Broderick, who that might be his best performance ever. Is in Election.
It's definitely up there.
God, he's so good in that movie. Who tries to sabotage Tracy's run for class president. The biggest twist, the film actually has a darker ending than the book. But the author says he didn't feel at all betrayed.
Isn't it? Yeah, like he goes to, he's like leading tours in Washington, D.C. or something.
Yeah.
She's a senator. And he's such a good, kind of wholesome-looking guy that it's a feat by Alexander Payne to make you really kind of hate him.
Oh, yeah.
You hate him.
Oh, yeah. Psycho, movie better than the book.
100%.
Yep. Marion Crane in her hotel room shower, enjoying the warm water when Norman Bates pulls back the curtain. Bernard Herrmann's unsettling score stabs as hard as Bates's blade. The climactic murder in Psycho is one of the most iconic moments in all of cinema. It's actually not the climax. It's about 20 minutes into the movie. But in Robert Bloch's 1959 novel of the same name, the murderer is but a line. Alfred Hitchcock took the sometimes less than thrilling thriller to a whole new level, building up the suspense by developing Marion's character and making Bates more human. He made the murder something of a legendary nightmares. The Sweet Hereafter. Not read the book. Love the movie. What is Anton Magoian doing? Has he done anything lately?
Let's see.
Because he's directed some of my favorite movies. Exotica is one of my... I love that movie. The Sweet Hereafter is a great film. He doesn't make happy movies.
No, he...
Calendar.
The most recent thing he's done is Remember, starring Christopher Plummer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Bruno Ganz.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Good filmmaker, man. And Canadian.
Good Lord, Exotica.
Oh, it's a great movie. It's such a great movie. And Elias Koteas is fantastic in it. And that's Bruce Greenwood, right?
Yeah, Bruce Greenwood, Sarah Polley.
Sarah Polley, Mia, was it?
Mia Kirshner?
Yeah.
And Don McKellar.
That's a great movie. Another one that has a heartbreaking ending. All of his movies, you know, Sweet Hereafter, my God.
Some people just, they don't want happy, no happy endings.
It's, I just, it's so, that's a hard movie to sit through. It's beautiful and it's great and it's well acted and really well directed. But my God, man, lighten up a little bit, Anton. All right. Let's see. We got some people on the line. 312-981-7200. Here's Jeff on WGN. Go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah, good morning.
Morning.
Yeah. I was thinking about the book Wise Guys.
And then,
are you familiar?
And that became Goodfellas.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think the book is pretty good, too, but the movie is, you know, the movie's great.
Yeah, the movie is a classic. Yeah, it is. It's and it is, in fact, better than the book. All right, Jeff, thanks.
Hey, have a good night.
Take care. Is Irishman based on a book?
It is.
It is, right? Yeah, man. I've not read Wise Guys, but I who wrote Wise Guys?
Wise Guys, well,
Nicholas. It's Nicholas. Well, I'm not talking about the Brian De Palma movie with
no.
Danny DeVito and Joe Pesci. Not Joe Pesci, Joe Piscopo. The author's name, Nicholas. Because he co-wrote...
So it's Wise Guy, Nicholas right. Pileggi.
Yeah, Pileggi.
Pileggi.
Yeah.
And
he co-wrote the screenplay.
Mm-hmm. And it was just him... I think it was just him really interviewing Henry Hill over the course of many, many years.
I met him. I met Nicholas Pileggi.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Back in 91 when he was in town because he was representing Goodfellas because Goodfellas basically swept...
Yeah.
You know, the Chicago Film Critic Awards, and I would pick up a lot of the celebrities from the airport and hang out with them and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I met him. He's a fantastic guy.
I can't imagine that was easy to have to sit down with Henry Hill and listen to him tell you about, like, yeah, here's all the crimes I committed, including murder.
Yeah. But it turned out to be a great movie, though. So, all right, we got a break here for some weather. Watchtower right there. And we're closing out the two for Tuesday here with some Hendrix, and we'll do Wildcard Wednesday tomorrow. All right. Coming up at 5 o'clock, Steve Grzanich has the opening bell, and the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Okay, we're talking about movies that are actually better than the books that they're based on. The Shawshank Redemption, they mention. Stephen King is clearly one of horror's undisputed masters, but his non-scary novella Rita Hayworth and The Shawshank Redemption was mostly forgotten in his mostly forgotten 1982 collection, Different Seasons, until writer-director Frank Darabont brought it to the screen 12 years later. Darabont expanded and heightened the prison drama about a wrongfully convicted murderer, Tim Robbins, and his fellow inmate, Morgan Freeman. Though somewhat of a commercial failure at the time, the flick has since garnered multiple accolades and found its way into several cinephiles' lists of greatest movies of all time. I thought the short story was good. I liked it. Silence of the Lambs. Ugh. Thomas Harris's 1988 novel about a young FBI agent working with a cannibal psychiatrist to catch a serial killer. Making a girl suit out of human skin was the kind of book that fans were reading through the night and then keeping the lights on after they finished. Jonathan Demme's 1991 adaptation was the kind of movie that had fans jumping in broad daylight. Sticking close to the text, the film was elevated by Oscar-winning performances from Jodie Foster, whose birthday is today, by the way. Jodie Foster, 57 years old. Anthony Hopkins. It also took home Academy Awards for Film Director and Screenplay. Fava beans and a nice Chianti. Have been terrifying ever since. By the way, would this brilliant, genius guy really pronounce it Chianti? Or was he doing that on purpose? Because it's Chianti. It's not Chianti.
Probably doing it on purpose.
Devil Wears Prada. I did not read the book, The Devil Wears Prada, but I enjoyed the movie very much, actually. You know who's great in that movie? Emily Blunt. She's great in that movie. That's the first time I really, really noticed Emily Blunt. That was like, oh, she's cool.
I think that might have been her first on-screen credit.
Is that right? Yeah, because I really remember going, who's that? Who's that? And I also really liked her in Charlie Wilson's War. And now she's just all around great. Everybody loves her. Hey, you know they started production on Quiet Place 2?
I kind of wish that they wouldn't do that.
No. Krasinski's writing and directing it.
At least they're bringing him back, but...
Well, they're not bringing him back in the... They can't bring him back in the movie.
Well, no.
Oh,
no.
I just ruined it for everybody who wasn't... Well, wait a minute. The movie. How old is the movie? 4 years old? Something like that?
4 years? I think it came out, like, last year.
No.
March of 2018?
No. It's older than that?
Yeah. 2018.
That was last year?
Yep.
Almost 2 years, so that's enough time for people to have seen it.
Yeah, it came out in April, the first week of April 2018.
I can't remember who's in it, though, but they replaced him with another guy. So I don't know who the character is going to be. But, I mean, the first one's great. The first movie's terrific and really scary. But I don't know if it's necessary. I mean, I know the movie made a ton of money. And, you know, obviously the studio was like, hey, make another one so that we can make a little dough. But I was completely satisfied with I thought the final shot of it was great. So, I don't know. Let's see. Here's Tom on WGN. Hey, Tom.
How you doing, Nick?
All right.
I agree with you on most things, but I think The Godfather is a great book.
Yeah.
I mean, I love the movie, too, but because they developed those characters. So, like, Johnny Fontaine has his own thing, with, you know, it's based on Frank Sinatra.
Right.
Luca Brasi.
Right.
The one scene I wish they put in the movie is when they got... I forgot, Fabrizio, the guy who killed Michael's wife.
Yeah.
They had that, but they edited it out. But I think The Godfather's a great book.
Yeah, I like the book. I didn't love it. I think the movie's better.
Well, I love the movie, too. I mean, it's like, you know, it's tough to choose, but
yeah.
Anyway, I just want to let you know that.
Okay, man. Take care.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
Jackie Brown, they say, is better than Rum Punch. The Notebook. I did not read The Notebook. But I like the movie. I like the Notebook. Lord of the Rings. Well, now be careful. Careful with this. Because I think they're equally great. You know what I mean? Like in different ways, because the books are great.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the most important works of the English language.
Yeah. I mean, I can understand why, you know, some people are like, why are all these damn songs in it? You know, Stand By Me, which is based on the story of The Body, widely considered better than the short story. Forrest Gump is much better than the book. Like, the movie is much better than the book. The author of the book hated the movie, though. Bridget Jones' Diary, never read the book. Princess Bride. Princess Bride is not better than the book. The movie is not better than the book. Have you ever read The Princess Bride?
I have not, but I've heard that the characterization of Princess Buttercup is very different. They make her way less capable, way less self-sufficient.
Well, it's also much funnier than the movie, like in a very sort of twisted way. I think the book is much better than the movie.
Because that's William Golding.
Yeah.
One of the greatest.
Goldman.
Goldman.
Yeah. And he wrote the screenplay.
Yeah. One of the greatest screenwriters of all time.
Fight Club. Movie's not better than the book. I like the book more than the movie. And I love the movie. Mm-hmm. Ice Storm. Yes. Better than that movie. Oh,
well,
God.
Thanksgiving's coming up.
Oh,
gotta watch it.
God. Children of Men. I've not read the book, but that is one of my favorite movies of all time. It is truly one of my favorite movies of all time. I saw it in the theater about seven times, like when it first came out. I just was obsessed with it. One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, which we mentioned already, and then Pitch Perfect.
Was not aware that was a book.
Yeah, it was a nonfiction book about the quest for collegiate a cappella glory. Okay. So there you go. All right, movies better than books. Let's take a break here. What do we got tomorrow?
Tomorrow, Rod Pyle's going
to
join us.
Oh, Rod Pyle, talking space right here on WGN. All right.